Good afternoon and welcome to our Ordinary Council meeting for Wednesday the 26th of June. I'd like to declare the meeting open at 5:36 and in doing so respectfully acknowledge the Gadiyara people whose land we're meeting on this afternoon, respectfully acknowledging the contribution of Gadiyara leaders and elders past, present and future in all working together for the betterment of the future city of Port Hedland. Welcome. Okay, item two, recording of attendance and apologies. Attendance as listed, 2.2, apologies nil, 2.3, approved leave of absence, Councillor Gloria Jacob. Item three, response to previous questions taken on notice, 3.1.1, Mr. Camillo Blanco. 3.2, questions from elected members at the Ordinary Council meeting held on Wednesday the 22nd of May 2013. 3.2.1, Councillor Carter. Item 4, public time. Public, this is your time. Just an important note before we do commence public time, this meeting is being recorded on audio tape as an additional record of the meeting and to assist with the minute-taking purposes, which may be released upon request to third parties. If you do not give permission for your recording of your participation, please indicate this at the meeting. The public is also reminded that in accordance with section 20.3 of the Town of Port Hedland Local Law on Standing Orders, nobody shall use any visual, vocal or electronic device or instrument to record the proceedings of any meeting unless that person has been given permission by the presiding member to do so. Okay, it is now 5:38. I'd like to open public question time. Can I have a show of hands who has questions for tonight's meeting? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, and I also have some on written on note here. So I'll start public question time and I'll start with these ones that are on written that have been received from a member of the public, Mr. Ian Halliburton. Okay, great. So question number one, the gateway development behind the TAFE, is this development rateable?
So I'll answer those.
Do you want me to read them all or answer them one at a time?
We want to read the questions out.
All right, cool. Number two, how are they rated? What rating category do they fall under? Three, who owns the gateway development and who pays the rates? Question four, how many people can be accommodated in the gateway development? Question five, why doesn't council take out advertisements explaining to ratepayers that no rates are collectible from BHP Billiton Iron Ore and FMG Port processing facilities and advertising the amount of rates foregone by not being able to rate these and other state agreement covered developments? Thank you. Mr. Halliburton couldn't be here tonight and he has asked that he get a written copy of what is said tonight. So if that could please happen, governance, that would be terrific. CEO.
So through you, Madam Mayor, the answers to Mr. Halliburton's questions are, one, is the development rateable? Yes, the Gateway Village development is rateable and has been rated since 1st of October 2012. Two, how are they rated and what rating category? The lot is currently rated on the gross rental value basis and of vacant land using the rate code of mass accommodation. Question three, who owns the Gateway development and who pays the rates? The Gateway development is on Crown land that is leased to Compass Group Australia Proprietary Limited and Compass Group therefore pays the rates. Question four, how many people can be accommodated in the Gateway development? As per the development application, the Gateway Village will accommodate 1,239 persons. And question five, why doesn't council take out the advertisements, etc.? We've got a reasonably long answer here, but our answer to that is to undertake valuations in order to calculate the rates foregone by the state agreements would come at a considerable cost to council and would require significant cooperation from the resource companies. The Department of State Development is responsible for negotiating and developing the state agreements with the resource companies. Part of any new state agreement requires a community development plan to be formed by the resource company, although any variation to a current state agreement does not require that. The town has been lobbying the state government over the last 12 months or so to allow the council or the local government authority to be part of the negotiations and to contribute to the development of the community development plans in particular. Currently, there is no requirement for the state to consult with local government, and to date, while some resource companies see the town's involvement to be of value, particularly when it comes to the community development plan and aligning it to the likes of the strategic community plan, the town remains uninvolved but will continue to lobby the state seeking an increased level of involvement. And at this stage, we are not intending to take out any advertisements, Madam Mayor.
Okay, thank you, CEO. Okay, further questions from members of the public. Please come forward and state your name nice and clear.
I just walked in the delegated register. It's one of the attachments in tonight's. Has there been any copies printed out for the public?
See you.
Has anyone got the delegated register? No.
Yes,
why?
One minute.
Why?
That's fine.
It's the requirement to give copies of the delegated register. I think it is a requirement, actually, by the Act.
The requirement to have a copy?
What's that?
I'm happy to get more copies made, Mr. Blanco, but at this stage I think we've only produced the one copy, have we? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the problem is it's been voted on tonight and it's very important. Attachments should be on the table with the minutes or the agenda as well, so people can read it.
Any further questions?
There is. Last special council meeting. The meeting was started at 4:30. I don't ever remember a meeting started at 4:30, special or ordinary. Can't have a reason why it started at 4:30.
That was the time that was set and it was advertised accordingly.
So is that going to be the new times for special meetings now?
No, that was just the time at that moment for consideration of those special items, dependent upon the availability of elected members being able to attend the meeting.
Was the meeting started at 4:30 to reduce the amount of public available at that meeting?
No, quite the contrary. It was actually pushed back as much as it could be by elected members to ensure attendance of all elected members who were present in town and making sure the public could attend.
Are the new powers of entry in the delegated register necessary and required?
See ya.
I would like you to answer that question because you're voting on it tonight. Or I'll take an answer from any of the councillors.
Well, I'm the presiding officer tonight, Mr. Blanco. I'm asking the CEO to provide an answer. Simple.
So through you, Madam Mayor, to Mr. Blanco, the officers have produced a recommendation with a variety of delegations. Some of those are repeated delegations from previous years, some are new. The particular ones with right of entry, as a CEO, I believe are required for the staff to be able to undertake their tasks efficiently and effectively.
Okay, that's all.
Thank you. Any further questions from members of the public? Please state your name nice and clear.
This week's heavy rainfall saw parts of Wedge Street flooded for at least the fourth time in recent years. This is resulting in thousands of dollars worth of property damage, lost trade, increased insurance premiums and disruptions to local businesses and property owners. Could you please explain what action was taken to improve the drainage after the last flood, why those actions failed and what actions will be taken to prevent this happening again? Thank you.
CEO?
Through Madam Mayor, can I refer that to the Director of Engineering Services, please?
Yeah. The original, I suppose, there's a couple of parts to that question. The upgrade that's happened in Wedge Street, prior to the upgrade in Wedge Street, I know people are familiar with it, there was an open-style drain with steel plates on top. So that had a problem in the fact that the entry point was quite small and generally when we had a heavy rain event, it would block up with leaves first, but when a plate was removed, the water would flow very well. In the upgrade of Wedge Street, the contractors have installed a pit with a grate on the top. The invert level of the pipe that's at the bottom of that pit that goes into a chamber at the corner of Richardson Street is only 200 millimetres difference in height. And the pipe that's in is probably not sufficient size either, but it's fairly flat. In saying that, it's fairly flat. So in an event where it it's not a heavy rainfall, it does work. But an event like we had yesterday, and we had a calculation done on that, was a 1 in 8.5 year event. The amount of water that was there compared to the pipe size and the lack of fall means it's going to flood, which it did. We have already designed a new drainage system to go in there, and the cost of that is around $30,000. And we have that program to happen in the new financial year with all the funds we have this year expended. So it's unfortunate what happened yesterday, and as of next week, those works will go to tender, well, not tender, but the quotes that we receive so expensive, which will fix the problem. But what we're putting in is very similar to what was in the first place, except it'll be a steel grated lid across the top. So it's all around the fall that's currently there. It's very minimal, so we really have to drain from the street level down back into the box column.
Thank you,
Madam Mayor. No worries. Any further questions from the public? Please come up and state your name nice and clear.
Last year when the Honourable Premier was here earlier in the year, I asked him three questions. One of those questions was about the future access of water for this town. New Year's Day this year, there will be plenty of water for everybody in this town. No pun intended from what's happened in the last 2 days. But the first question is it possible for council to see if a water pipe can be laid from either the North West Coastal Highway pipeline process at the moment to the cemetery, or failing that, from the Precinct 3 development to the cemetery, because I believe the cemetery needs a lot more trees around the perimeter of it because it's just too bare and too barren.
See you.
So I'll probably defer that, Madam Mayor, through to the Director of Engineering Services.
Through the chair, we currently do have water at the cemetery. We do have water pipe and water service at the cemetery. We'd have to investigate whether that service would be sufficient for water trees around the perimeter of the cemetery. I suppose in saying that, the cemetery, the current fence that's around the cemetery is actually not the current size of the reserve for the cemetery. It's something we have put forward to a master plan for the whole size of the site, so you can imagine the cemetery, what you think of the cemetery is so big, the actual reserve is a lot bigger than what it currently is. So we're looking at where we would actually plant the trees, so they are in line with, I suppose, roads that we put in there, and not put them in where we would actually have pots going. So there's a little bit of work around that, if that answers it.
You're happy with that, Mr. Wally?
Second question is, does council know when the South End of the Aquatic Centre is going to receive floodlights?
CEO?
Through you, Madam Mayor. There was a delay in obtaining the pylons for the lights, but in terms of dates, I might defer to the Director of Community and Development.
Madam Mayor, the current program, so the originally the tender came in over the tender, the budgeted amounts are now taking a different approach to procurement. The light poles have been ordered. The program currently is late August, early September for the supply and installation of the lights at the shack.
The final question is, does council know if the health department of WA has, collated sufficient evidence or figures and evidence concerning the dust issue in the west end of town? And if they do have these figures and numbers, could they release them to us? Because there seems to be increasing confusion regarding development or any development in the foreseeable future in the west end of Port Hedland.
See ya.
Through you, Madam Mayor, the Department of Health is undertaking a dust health assessment program that is underway, and my understanding is the results of that are expected towards the end of 2015.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Any further questions from the public?
Yes, my name is Ryan Button. I've got three questions. The first one is really the new appointment of the airport director's position. Is it correct that our new director is based in Perth? If so, who pays for his travel, accommodation and car hire during his visits to Port Hedland? And what is his rotation through the terms on how long is he here for at a time?
CEO?
Through you, Madam Mayor, the Program Director for Airport Redevelopment is an employee of the Town of Port Hedland. He is funded through the Airport Reserve Fund, and he is working part-time in Perth, part-time in Port Hedland. His requirement to attend Port Hedland is around the airport committee meetings and other strategic meetings. The majority of his time will be spent in Perth. When he is in Port Hedland, through the negotiated arrangements, the Town of Port Hedland incurs those costs.
The second one is, during the last presentation 2 weeks ago with the proposed rate increase, the examples of the rates indicated a difference in information that was actually supplied in the agenda to what we saw on the PowerPoint. Was there any reason for the two different examples presented?
CEO?
Through Madam Mayor, I think you're referring to the minutes and the agenda. Is that what you're
referring to? The actual agenda, the actual agenda item.
The Director of Corporate Services went.
So there was a motion by Council, resolution of Council not to accept the officer's recommendation and to adjust the percentage from 12% to 8% on the gross rental value for residential, commercial and industrial. And so therefore that change from 12% to 8% needed to see a subsequent change in the rate and the dollar. So the figures contained within the minutes are the adopted figures, and they are based at 8% on gross rental value, residential, commercial and industrial.
Okay. And question number three, is it true that the council has recently appointed a matriculation person to oversee council gardening? Was there or is there any company in Port Hedland to carry out these duties, and did a house and a car cover the appointment?
CEO?
Could I defer that one to the Director of Engineering Services, please?
We have, I'm just refreshing my memory on this. We had a position, we have a court, we have a leading hand for the reticulation, and we have just appointed a reticulation person. It's a level four, which is a common level within the organisation, with the outside workforce. So no, there is no house, I believe, with that position, and there's no vehicle. We do have a work vehicle that they use during work hours.
Thank you. Any further questions from the public? Yes, please come forward. State your name nice and clear.
Yeah, good evening. I'm Andrew Olney. I'm hoping I'm not going to make a fool of myself asking this question, but I'm hoping to get some clarity in relation to some planning issues. The first question I've got is local planning policy number 11 the current policy? So, planning, yeah, so it's a local planning policy. Is that the current policy?
Through Madam Mayor, if it's a policy that is a council policy, until such time as policies are amended by council, that will be the policy that staff would be using.
So the next question, is the reason for having a local planning policy to enable developers and ratepayers to work within the state and local planning requirements?
Again, through you, Madam Mayor, the aim of policies is to allow developers and applicants to deal directly with staff, and if their applications fall within the constraints of the policy, we can tend to, we are normally able to deal with applications more expediently.
If a building application met the requirements of the local planning policy and the state R codes, would this be classified as a permitted use under the power planning scheme?
Through you, Madam Mayor, not necessarily, but I might defer to the acting director, but my understanding of the question is, if you comply with policy, it doesn't necessarily mean that the town planning scheme requirements for land use are going to be complied with. Okay. You would normally think they should match up, but they won't always.
Okay. So if I could just like to read a statement from the policy. It says, notwithstanding several development standards, outbuildings, the following zones that comply with the following shall be permitted. That is the word permitted. Permitted is obviously something that's used in the planning scheme. Goes on to explain about rural and residential zones, an outbuilding that's collected, do not exceed 200 square metres or 2% of the aggregate area of the site, do not exceed a wall height of 4.2 and do not exceed a ridge height of 6 metres. They are a slated policy. It has a reason for the variation. And then on the last page of this document says, where residential where residential development does not comply with the requirements of the R codes as varied by the local planning policy, a planning permit must be obtained. Now, the question I've got is, I've had an application that meets all of the R code requirements in terms of setbacks. It was on a rural residential block. It met the requirements of the local planning policy, but subsequently it was required after the building approval process to review the necessary planning approval. The reason I ask this question is that as a builder and developer, I find it confusing, and I've got mixed messages from planning and submitting plans about this issue, and what I'm looking for is some sort of clarification. I did actually email the senior planning officer, and I have a copy of that email here, asking these questions quite directly, and I was not provided with a written answer, and I'm still confused about these issues. So my understanding would be that if I met the requirements of the R codes, as set down, and I met the local planning policy, that I wouldn't need to have planning approval, wouldn't have to apply for planning approval. That's my question.
Through you, Madam Mayor. Andrew, I'm without actually seeing the particular case, I can't give you a categoric answer. I think your assumptions are generally right, but without actually knowing.
In this arena, because I've asked this question at the desk downstairs, and I get a mixed message. In other words, I'm told one thing, but the inference is that not a definite thing. And so I want some clarity in relation to this.
Is manager for planning able to say anything?
What I could say is that I agree with the CO through you, Madam Mayor. I'm not aware of that specific case because it was not stated to us. What I could endeavour to do is to follow that up through our procedures as well. Mm. There may be a situation where you have comments that was raised internally from engineering services or building services that may have justified certain requirements in terms of a permit, but not having the application in front of me, I'm not able to make that statement.
Just suggested
the clarification I'm after is whether there is a policy, because I've heard such things as, you can see it's a new dwelling on a new block of land that doesn't require it. It's a new dwelling on a rural residential block of land that now does require, regardless of meeting the planning policy, and that it's a new outbuilding on an existing block of land that it does, but I can't find any statements in any policies that say that's the case.
Okay, if we can, without the specifics and getting the address. No, that's fine. If when you hand your questions to governance, if we can have that email as well, the CEO will convene a meeting with yourself and the relevant planning person with your actual file, so we can actually go through that, and that will then provide some clarification. And then I think that will then lead to perhaps a note that we need to put on our website and to accompany the policy just to help with that clarification. So really appreciate you bringing that. So if you just make sure that governance receive that, if you're happy with that, the CEO's office will be in touch with you. Thanks very much for that. Are there any further questions from the public? Okay. Thank you very much, members of the public, for your questions. Public question time is now closed at 6 p.m. 4.2, public statement time. I declare public statement time also open at 6 p.m. Has anyone got any public statements? Please state your name nice and clear.
Camilla Blanchard. The application from LandCorp tonight is supported by the town's officers. The town's officer does not suggest an alternate recommendation to deny the rezoning which allows noxious use in our new transport zone. This area was zoned as a transport hub so as to start the correction of poor planning decisions over the history of Headlands industrial zones. The LUMP and the Port Growth Plan both identified that certain businesses should not coexist in the same vicinity, especially with the residential component attached. Bad planning and lack of compliance have contributed to health issues, safety concerns and so on over the history of Wedgefield. We have the health department here tonight with a presentation on air quality in the West End. And on the other hand, we have a proposal from LandCorp wanting to put noxious uses on land which will put any emissions over our new Kingford estate and propose 4,000-man BHP Vipo can, as well as all the 33 new industrial blocks. Wind directions for most of the year put any of those emissions over that area. Is that okay for the EPA, DC and the Town of Port Hedland? I had a meeting last week with the town's planning officer where he suggested this was a good proposal. I asked how many applications were out there for noxious use. The response was to the effect of, I'm not privy to that information. But on page 32 of the agenda item, it states, in recognition of high level of demand, it is considered appropriate to expand the land use, referring to noxious. Conversations with other planning people determined there is as many as 15 applications out there for noxious use. Well, what are they? That's convenient for Landcorp. The attempted rezoning of that land is because it's not selling. It's too expensive for even multinationals, let alone local business hopefuls. Just like local people have to cop the property value reductions because of the economic downturn, so does the likes of Landcorp. The answer is drop the price, not find another market, and change zonings to suit any situation that may become a hurdle in the land sale profits. Will you allow local landowners to rezone their land when they cannot sell because of zoning restrictions? Do not approve this proposal. I'm just going to go on about the delegated register. Elected members are required to sit here and make decisions that affect the town's financial future. Scrutiny and accountability is demanded for all aspects of the town's business, but as council this council cannot scrutinise the financial decisions made because on the 26th of April last year you handed that responsibility to the CEO through the delegated register. You handed the responsibility to make financial decisions up to $500,000 to the CEO. That's on page 22 of the delegated register. Also, the authorisation to transfer money from account to account up to $1,000,000 without you knowing. With the written approval of the mayor, an unlimited amount, page 15 of the delegated register. You're not really needed here for any financial decisions. That amount needs to be reduced to a maximum of 50 grand. And money transferred from reserves by absolute majority as per the Act. In tonight's agenda on page 289, 11.4.1.2, WA Regional City Alliance membership, $50,000 for membership, The CEO in the past weeks has stated there will be all manner of cost cutting to force the budget to balance. I can't believe this membership amount can even be considered. Not only is 50 grand being spent unnecessarily, but also staff time, airfares, accommodation, meals and travel have not been factored in. Agenda items like this show the unwillingness to make the decisions that benefit the town. $50,000 is best spent on our local road system. If this alliance is making decisions that benefit the town in ways we cannot come up with, then read the minutes of their meetings on the web and get that info for free. Delegate Richard, my references are in relation to powers of entry. There are some very concerning new delegated powers that have been added to the register. If you councillors have not read the register in full, then it must be laid on the table for further discussion or delete all these powers. My view is the powers, the delegated register attempts to provide the town is illegal. These powers can only be described as invasion of privacy, an erosion of democracy, a local government-controlled communist town. Are the ratepayers aware of the apparent powers to enter on their property? Would the town of Port Hedland's population be happy with these new local laws? This would be open to abuse. Who is monitoring the enforcement and compliance? What is in place to protect the rights of individuals? Will this result in the town facing litigation? This has the potential to create instant conflict. Without a warrant, police have power to enter in an emergency, and that is described by imminent death. Just some references to your delegated register. The CEO delegates the power. This is on page 36. General procedures for entering property, notice of entry, entry under warrant, entry in an emergency and opening fences. 3.1, authorised person. The power of an authorised person being entry power. Power after entry for compliance, obtaining information and documents, use of force and assistance. We also have on, that was on page 39. On page 52, we also have added to that delegated register the planning, director of planning and development, manager of planning services, senior statutory planning officer, senior strategic planning officer, and of course the original compliance officer. I don't think there's anyone else we could add to that. But in contradiction of that, the Act states general procedures, this is 3.1 in the Local Government Act, general procedures for entering property. Except in an emergency, or if the entry is authorised by a warrant of a justice, entry by or on behalf of local government on any land, premises or thing is not lawful unless A, the consent of the owner or occupier has been obtained, and B, notice has been given under this section, 3.32. So, the Act states you have not got those powers, so we need to delete those powers of the delegated register.
Any further statements from the public? Okay, thank you very much, public, for your participation. Really appreciate it. It's now 6:08. I declare public statement time closed. Item 5, questions from members without notice. Deputy Mayor?
Nothing.
Councillor Carter?
Nothing, Madam Mayor.
Councillor Gillingham?
Oh, yeah, I did have, actually, thank you, Madam Mayor, for the chair. We used to get monthly reports from the Visitor's Centre on lots of things that was happening regarding the Visitor's Centre and around town. I've just recently learnt that hotel rooms sometimes are still costing up to about $350 per night. There's a lot of hotel rooms, I believe, that are empty, so would the Visitor's Centre sort of compile a list like that of availability in rooms if we had a monthly report or a three-month
CEO?
Report or something?
Through you, Madam Mayor, obviously the Visitor Centre's been contracted out. They have a contract, they provide quarterly reports to us with the requirements to report on mainly their financial operations and their major activities. To my knowledge, they are not keeping statistics on vacant rooms. I think they have a list of properties where accommodation is available, but I'm not aware that they keep statistics of available rooms. But I don't know with the Director of Community Development.
That's correct. They've got a range of metrics they report on, but that's largely based on the activities of the visitors attending the centre and the types of tours they might be booking and that. Mm-hmm. They are not asked to gather information about room vacancies and they don't gather that information.
Oh, okay. All right, thank you. I found out myself that hotel rooms were about $350 per night and they're pretty much most of the places are empty, it's just a bit sad that they were still that high amount as well. I know there's nothing we can do about it, but it's just, you know, it'd be good to find out whether they could actually drop the price, especially with visitors coming to town. All right, thank you. If I may, regarding the flooding recently, the last few days, do we know that if companies like BHP, FMG, other big companies have had good planning practices regarding They fill a lot of areas in. I did talk to the Director of Finance, the Director of Engineering tonight regarding this, and just wondering, you know, has good planning practices gone into put into place regarding filling all this, these areas in their big areas of laydown?
CEO?
Through you, Madam Mayor. Most of that work has been done on mining leases or areas covered under the State Agreement Acts, and they would be required to obtain their environmental clearances with those works that are intended to be undertaken. One would hope that they are scrutinised and they're taking the appropriate actions.
It's just, through the chair, I just wanted to say perhaps it wouldn't help with the flooding that we've had at the moment. Water's got to go somewhere.
Any further questions?
Yes, thank you. I'd like to ask about the, if I could ask our director, Gordon Marley, if we could find an update on the Civic Centre, the use of the Civic Centre, if it's not being used at the moment, and I'll when will it...
Direct that to the CEO.
So through Madam Mayor, Councillor Gilliam, you're referring to the Gratwick Hall?
Yeah, Gratwick Hall, yep. Yes.
So Gratwick Hall is about to have some temporary furniture placed in it for office use. We have some staff who come in from the airport building from time to time and have meetings. And so we're going to be at a hot desk. We've also got, obviously, the airport program director. We've also got four people sharing one office downstairs. So there will be some staff started to use that facility temporarily. I have just approved of the architect for the design work, and that person, that company will be up here soon, and they'll be having discussions with not only the council, but with staff about the design work that we need to undertake for fit-out of this building.
Thank you, and through the chair, we'll be actually notifying the public. That's actually the procedure at the moment. That's where we've got to, the stage we've got to. I'm getting questions all the time from the public regarding the
hall. True, Madam. We can notify the community of the current status. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, thank you. And the last one is something, Madam Mayor, which I spoke to you about the other day, was about bees in our town, the lack of bees. I believe that there are suburbs in Perth where people actually have beehives and talk to actually have beehives dropped off at their place. Is something that we could perhaps look into in the future, whether it's something that could work up in our district here, or I guess a particular type of bee, but something that we know that we don't have many bees around at the moment.
Maybe, CEO, it's something with people's allergies and anaphylactics and stuff that we probably need to investigate a little bit more and see what the process is, perhaps.
Through you, Madam Mayor, my understanding is most local governments don't allow beehives in residential areas.
I don't know, so I didn't know because what of those the issues were, or whether it was just...
How about we table it and stuff, give us some advice on that.
Advice, yes.
All right, that's all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Councillor Hooper.
Yes, with the flooding down the end of our street yesterday, I was quite impressed with the speed at which the water dissipated, and I was just wondering whether that was purely because of the drains that have been emptied out or whether there was electrical pumping that went on.
CEO?
I'll take credit for that if it's something good.
Yeah.
No, so seriously, our engineering team have done a great job in cleaning drains out,
yeah,
and understand that in many areas the water disappeared pretty quickly through some of that clean out work. And we were probably fortunate that at the same, all due respect to engineering, we were probably fortunate the rain started to cease as the tide was coming in with a very high tide yesterday. So we're lucky, but the work that's been done, I think, again, demonstrates maintenance required on all of our assets, including our drainage systems.
Any further questions, Councillor Hooper?
That's it, thank you.
Councillor Jean-Marc?
Yes, just one if I could, Mahalo. Just to ask when the next community conversation evening will be held and where and how that will be advertised and made available for the public to understand
See
the process.
And through you, Madam Mayor, the next community conversations is to be held on Wednesday the 10th of July. It's being held in the Jimble Bar Room at Wanangara Stadium in South Headland. There's information, I think, already gone out through a media notice last week. Assuming we'll get some more publicity on that. And we have a topic of projects. I think it's myths and facts. Something along those lines about our key projects. And I think we've set that time for 6:30 p.m. 6:30 p.m.
I've also seen it advertised on our new Facebook site, so that's fantastic that we've got it out promoted there as well. Any further questions?
No, thank you.
Councillor Hubbs? Councillor Taylor?
Yes, please, Madam Mayor. My question follows from Councillor Gillingham, and I just had a little bit of context for a couple of questions. On the 27th of March, Council resolved to immediately convert the existing Gratwick Hall for temporary staff office accommodation. As part of the information for elected members in the agenda for this decision, the following costs were included and explained. There was the $5 million loan for the upgrade of the Civic Centre building, including roofing repairs, and there was the $1.7 million for the temporary fit-out of the Gratwick Hall and Chambers as part of the conversion. In line with this decision, the public bookings ceased from the 30th of April, and the case for the conversion of Gratwick Hall to office space was communicated as urgent and essential for the safe operation of the Town of Port Hedland business. For my questions in recent weeks, it's apparent that no one has yet to permanently move into Gratwick Hall, and it's been utilised as an overflow meeting room, which was the practice that previously occurred while it was still available to public use. Further to my questions, the conversion costs are now seem to be in the order of $3.5 million, identified to be spent out of the $5 million upgrade refurbishment loan, which does seem a lot higher than the $1.7 million as identified in the agenda item. Apparently these tendered costs of $3.5 million is to upgrade the electrical and IT facilities to the Civic Centre as a whole, and so that's how it's able to come out of the $5 million refurbishment loan. I was just questioning this as I was assured as part of the benefit of relinquishing Gratwick Hall would be the refurbishment of the building in a structural sense, with the roofing repairs and other such requirements being addressed once and for all. And so I just was concerned that 3.5 out of 5 million doesn't leave a lot for that. The resolution stressed the word temporary, and the people of Port Hedland would like to get the Gratwick Hall back as soon as practical, with alternative office arrangements being sourced. So my questions are, if you could please share the timeline for the utilisation of the Gratwick Hall for office space, which I realise you kind of addressed for Councillor Gillingham. I was also asking if you could share and outline the costs that have been spent and will be spent in converting the hall to office space. Do you want me to read them all out and answer them?
So those two questions. In terms of the timeframes, we will put a timeframe together so that elected members in the community are aware of the works that need to be undertaken in the Gratwick Hall, including the sourcing of architectural design work, not only for Gratwick Hall, but how the balance of the current office accommodation needs to be retrofitted. So the budget at this stage, and we're sort of obviously looking at a draft budget for year 13-14, there are two elements to that. One was the roof repairs, and two is the refit out of office accommodation. I guess our estimation at this stage is we're looking at a $5 million total budget, including the roof. And of course, there'll be a lot of discussion about what that $5 million will get us to lead to a permanent solution for an upgrade of this facility. But certainly, it's not just about Gratwick Hall, it's about the other office areas downstairs. As indicated earlier, the Director of Engineering Services shares his office with three other people. The PA is in the Director of Corporate Services office. There are a number of issues there, as well as the staff we've got out at the airport building, which has been proven to be occupationally, to be probably not in the best of conditions from an OH&S perspective. So the actual breakdown of the expenditure on individual line items is not yet done. It's an allocation of funds, and we'll need to work within that, but that will come back to Council for your information.
Thanks. So my following question was, which goes to that, is how the funding arrangements will affect the long-term repairs of the roof and as in this building as a whole. Yep. And the 1.7 was the cost, because we had all the options costed, was the cost for the fit-out, not counting the air conditioning, not counting the refurbishment. So it was 1.7 million conversion, and then the remainder was possibly for refurbishing this building, because we already know it has existing issues.
So through you, Madam Mayor, those figures were taken through a QS report that was provided by architects. So at the end of the day, we need to now work with this architect on the redesign of the inside of that part of the building, and also come back and have discussions with Council about how that might look and which are the best elements to undertake. But certainly, staff are very, very concerned about getting the roof fixed as a priority. The roof structural elements need to be done before amenity elements.
Is the 3.5 million being tendered?
No.
Okay.
No, there has been no tender on those physical works.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. Okay. Item 6, declaration by members to have given due consideration to all matters contained in the business paper presented before us. Can I please have a show of hands? Thank you. Let the record record 8-0. Item 7, confirmation of minutes of the previous meeting of council. 7.1, confirmation of the minutes of the ordinary meeting of council held on Wednesday the 22nd of May. Do I have any points of clarification?
Yes, Madam Mayor, if you don't mind.
Yep.
Points of clarification refer to page 266 of the ordinary meeting. It's in relevance to the tender documentation for the airport.
Mm-hmm.
I understand, after talking to the local government department, that once a figure has been accepted as a tender documentation, that amount of figure must indicate the tender in the minutes. In this case, it has not done that. It states purely, it says in here, award tender to international such and such as per tender submission, no monetary value. If I remember rightly, the monetary value was submitted to us in a confidential paper,
mm-hmm.
so nobody except whoever submitted that has got the prices in here. The prices of the tenders must be documented in the minutes of that accepted notice. So I would request that the amendment to this minutes show the actual tender price, which is actually required under the Act of the Local Government Act.
So it's coming through, Madam Mayor. My apologies, because I thought that was our process now, that when the once council had made its resolution, that the dollar figure was then to be inserted into that resolution. So my apologies, council, will have that corrected.
So can I move the acceptance of this resolution with that amendment?
Move, Councillor Carter, seconded.
Yes.
Councillor De Cash. All in favour. 8-0. Thank you. Good to see everyone's awake. And now I believe we have some other minutes. 7.2, confirmation of the minutes of the special meeting of council held on Wednesday the 8th of May 2013 at 4:50. Do I have any points of clarification?
No points, 7 minutes.
Move, Councillor Carter. Seconded, Councillor Hunt. Do I have any against? Motion carried, 8-0. Do I have any more? Yes, 7.3. Confirmation of the minutes of the special meeting of council held on Wednesday the 12th of June. Do I have any points of clarification? It was sent out in an email that it was accidentally left off.
Oh, okay.
Move, Councillor Carter. As long as everyone's happy. Yep.
Yeah.
Seconded, Councillor Hunt. Do I have any against? Motion carried, 8-0. Good work, everyone. Thank you, Governance. All right. Announcements by presiding member without discussion. Keep mine short and sweet. On Saturday, I had the great privilege and honour of welcoming the 2013 Trichinemi Oneness Home Peace Run. They actually ran into town, ran all the way. They left Canberra in April and are running back to Canberra and will get there mid-August. So it's a 15,000-kilometre run, and it was just fantastic. Councillor Hunt was there as well. Fantastic to meet people from Croatia, Mongolia, New Zealand, Australia, all running and enjoying the experience of running with the torch and spreading the message of peace. It was a real honour to recognise 6 individuals from our community to receive Peace Run medallions and awards. Robin Middleton from the RSL, Anna Jasinski from St Vincent de Paul. We also had Tom Keefe from the Finucane Island Club. Also we had Joan Foley from the Headland Community Living Association.
Tony
McGorry and Bob Neville. Thanks, everyone. I didn't write it out. But it was really good to recognise those 6 individuals who don't often receive awards, and it was good to be able to recognise their efforts. And Chris and Councillor Hunt, you were there, that Joan Foley was quite emotional when she received her award. So it was really good to see that they were really touched. And we received a letter from the ACT Legislative Assembly from Katie Gallagher, MLA, the Chief Minister. This came from when they set up, so it's passed to the Council, so I'll pass it to us to put on record. But also very proudly, we received a certificate of appreciation for our efforts, and it's all signed by all the runners, and it's actually made out to the City of Port Hedland. I did not change that. I thought that was very appropriate. They are spreading the word of peace, and there was no need to change that. So this certificate presented to the City of Port Hedland, I'll pass it to you, CEO,
you.
To please frame and display accordingly. So thank you very much. They didn't get one. So, no, it was very, very good and just an amazing effort. And you've got to be careful not to get very excited about those things, and then I thought about injuries and stuff and thought best not to do that. So item 9, reports by elected members without discussion. Deputy Mayor.
Madam Mayor, I'd just like to read a couple of newspaper reports at the weekend newspaper. First one's concerning the new Perth Arena. I'll just read a couple of items out. In what could be a breach of the Australian Building Code, the controversial $549 million Perth Arena won't be approved by the Department of Fire and Emergency Services until they have approved the construction meets design and fire safety standards. Fire wardens have been stationed around the venue, which opened in November and can hold up more than 14,000 people. And Mr. The Treasurer, Troy Buswell, said operational plans were in place to ensure that no safety risks to the public, which is what we did, at the opening of the Wynagara Stadium with fire wardens, the fire brigade and council personnel in attendance at the opening. Mm. So I'm just highlighting this fact here that not only was it an oversight of Wynagara Stadium, but it can occur anytime, anywhere and at any building. I mean, this one cost $549 million compared to our $35. Second article, I'd like to just quickly read a couple of things. The state government has admitted the water testing regime at the Perth Premier facility was mismanaged. As figures show, Champion Lakes has been closed 22 times in the past 22 and a half years because of dangerous toxin levels.
Mm.
It is Perth's biggest rowing facility and is also used for swimming and triathlon events. 22 times in 2.5 years, Madam Mayor. Mm. So obviously their water testing wasn't up to scratch. So it's great the way we managed our water testing at the shack until it was safe enough to open fully and safely. So it's just a lesson that if you've got to do something, do it properly no matter how long it takes, so you don't have to close things and open and close. So congratulations, councillors, for and I'm being one of them, for taking the stand that until the water testing was safe and we were happy with the situation, so was the Department of environment or whatever, that the swimming pool stayed closed until it was safe to open. Mm. So congratulations again, and thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. Stuart Littlemore, good work.
Yeah, no worry, I'll track it down.
Councillor Carter?
Nothing, thank you, Madam Mayor.
Councillor Gillingham?
I just briefly, thank you, Madam Mayor. I had the opportunity to attend a couple of courses for council in Perth recently, and one was on asset management and risk management to do with the assets. Now, I found it very, very interesting that the amount of assets that we now have in our town council and to meet other councils as well from other areas. Also recently on managing conflict in the areas of council, the public and in everyday life, and I just found I would recommend that all councillors get an opportunity to do both those courses because they were very, very interesting. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Yep. Councillor Hooper?
Nothing, thank you, Madam Mayor.
Councillor Jean-Luc?
Just one, if I could, Mayor Hallett. Excuse me. I'd just like to report that last night at the Port Hedland Chamber of Commerce monthly meeting, I was reappointed as President of the Chamber of Commerce. And thank you. And to also answer Councillor Gillingham's question, the Chamber has been doing a body of work in relation to affordable accommodation and has assisted many, many businesses over the past 2 years. So we'll make sure that information goes on the website, so it's available for anybody, not just small business. That's my report. Thank you.
Terrific. Thank you. Well done. Congratulations. Councillor Hunt.
I attended the BHP CCG meeting, Community Consultative Group, and I'd just like to report that progress is still continuing on in the Inner Harbour, and although it's not as busy as it was at this time last year, they are still moving forward.
Terrific. Thank you. thank Councillor Taylor? No. All right. Thank you, elected members, for all your efforts and endeavours. Item 10, petitions, deputations, presentations, submissions. Just very quickly, I momentarily forgot that last meeting I left everyone in suspense that we had gone to Caloundra in Queensland for the 2013 Tidy Town Sustainable Communities Awards, the national awards, and Port Hedland was the winner of the Environmental Innovation and Protection Award, and we were highly commended in the Community Action and Partnerships Award. So it's with great pleasure that I actually get to hand over these awards, and they go straight to the pool room, straight up on the appropriate spot. And I'll be able to talk more about Tidy Towns next month, because the 2013 Tidy Towns, the state regional judging part, is being, we are judged on the 4th of July. So anyone who's available, I encourage you to be involved in this year's judging. And now it gives me great pleasure, getting back to the agenda, 10.1, Pilbara Feasibility Study, University of WA. I'd like to welcome Dr. Ben Killigrew. Welcome back, Dr. Ben.
Hey, I'm Boyd. Thank you very much for having me tonight, councillors. I really like coming up to the Pilbara, obviously, so any excuse will do. But this is a good one. I'd like to take the opportunity to give you a briefing of where UWA Pilbara is at the moment. Press all the buttons and then. That might be better to do it the old way. So I don't wish to give you a lesson in the Pilbara, because you know it better than anyone, but I like comparative statistics, and for me as a previous, in my last former life was as a researcher, I like the numbers, and the gross regional product of the Pilbara, around $32.5 billion, compares very favourably to some states, even in Australia. And certainly the Northern Territory at only $18 billion. You know as well as I do that this is an international investment destination with a geopolitical influence that's growing. It's certainly globally focused, and our global partners here are certainly focused on the Pilbara. That might not be the case with many levels of government, but certainly at UWA we're well aware of this fact. The population in the Pilbara is highly mobile. The stats there, the 62,000 and the forecast of 150 always raise hackles, because we're never quite sure of how many people live here. But certainly there's a growing population, and there's a very distinct population in terms of the innovation and productivity. Thanks. What you find still, however, if you do a Google image search, is the Pilbara. You get a lot of red dirt. A lot of trucks, a lot of maps, just to show people where it is, because a lot of people don't really know. If we transfer to the next slide, the Pilbara, though, as you well know, is changing. There are a lot of initiatives, some of which have been built, some of which are underway. They're not just buildings, there are cultural initiatives as well, and every time I come up here there's something different. So what is happening now is the new reality for the Pilbara, and the Pilbara doesn't really want to be like the South or like Perth. It wants to be a new destination and a global destination. At UWA, we certainly have a global focus as well. We're a top 100 university. Sorry if you can transfer. We're celebrating our centenary for a start this year, and we're WA's top 100 university, certainly with a global focus. A member of the group of eight universities in Australia, which are the leading research institutions, and we're one of only two Australian members of the Worldwide Universities Network. We're also responsible for about 70% of the university-based research in WA, and the UWA Pilbara facility will be a research-focused facility. Thanks. We already have regional presence in Albany. It's a difficult game in regional areas. As you know, the costs are very high, particularly the operational costs. We also have administrative responsibility for the Geraldton University Centre, which was quite a difficult management project up until recently, where square kilometre array is now partially housed there. And the square kilometre array is one of the biggest projects in human history, so it's quite a significant draw for that part of Australia. The reason I highlight that is that these presences eventually gain a momentum and create their own inertia, and they do create a destination for investment, if you like, whether that's capital investment or investment of innovation and mines. We have a quite strong connection to the Pilbara as a university. We pride ourselves on being the university of the whole of Western Australia. And in the Pilbara, we have quite a strong presence in our rural clinical school in Karratha and South Hedland, and through the Combined University Centre for Rural Health that we administer. The Rural Clinical School trains final year medical students, and we have 11 centres around the state that we're engaged with that run those courses for the students in their final year. We also obviously have a strong link through the energy and minerals sector. That's sort of the given, I suppose, in this part of the world. But under that, there are a whole list of other things that we do currently, even without having a physical presence, such as the oceanography and marine sciences. We've been through the health, medicine and dentistry. We have the only dental school in the state. Our resource, economics, our anthropology and archaeology, including the Rock Art Centre of Management, our Indigenous Studies or School of Indigenous Studies, regional development, social impact, and I can go on and on. The last one on that list was UWA Outreach, and that they are programs delivered within the high schools, especially in the Pilbara, but also in other low socioeconomic areas or schools in the state that show kids what university is about. We take them down to Perth and we give them opportunities or other ideas of what they might do with their life or their existence other than the obvious opportunities that exist in the Pilbara. The university subcampus, if you like, or the university research facility in this part of Australia, it has fairly strong support already through government planning and policy. The WAPC Pilbara Planning Infrastructure Framework mentions a potential university subcampus. The RDA Pilbara's report mentions university facility developments. And the recent report by the government on the Cancer of the Bush report, its recommendation 21 was that government should develop initiatives to encourage the provision of tertiary education providers to resource communities. There's another addition to that which came out very recently, and that was the Coalition's 2030 vision for developing Northern Australia. So without being partisan, that's another document by a political party in this case, but that supports the development of the north of Australia. Certainly mentions the Pilbara quite often with it in that document. So our aim is to establish a business case by the end of the year that outlines a case for research facilities in the Pilbara. Whenever I say UWA Pilbara, people tend to think that we're developing a sprawling campus. So we're very keen to sort of manage that expectation, I suppose. We are talking research facilities. These are a very Pilbara-specific facilities, if you like. If you've been reading about higher education, as I know you all do with your spare time, the world of tertiary education, if you like, is changing very rapidly. There's a lot more online content, so a university campus is probably unlikely to happen in Western Australia again, but certainly with a research facility with the right design and the right investment, I suppose, there are many opportunities for researchers, undergraduate student support, outreach programs, and possibly online postgraduate courses, if you like. The current capabilities of UWA, as I listed before, there's the obvious energy and minerals sort of scope. The the benefit of a research facility here will mean that the researchers that aren't engaged in the energy and minerals research, that don't have the support of a mining company or a large project, might be able to use a research facility for developing their projects or delivering their projects in due course, which means an increased engagement by the whole raft of university initiatives and faculties, so that it's not specifically an energy and minerals focus, it's a whole swath of university activities, and that's basically just it ticks your sustainability agenda of the triple bottom line outcomes. So the business case will obviously take in the current capability that we have in the Pilbara, but also project some future capabilities with a given facility or a network of relationships or infrastructure. There's certainly a need to identify whether it's a site, a location, or infrastructure that we can share or work with partners on. And the aim is to get a network of these relationships or facilities all the way from a business as usual. Is what we're doing at the moment, which is visiting the Pilbara as and when required, all the way through to maybe a shiny building on the main street or at the port where our oceans vessels can go or what have you. So we need to investigate everything from those in between those options and come up with a recommendation to engage better with the Pilbara. Obviously, the Pilbara is a difficult place to do work, so the commercial focus or the focus on efficiencies and the sharing of facilities and so forth is especially critical. You probably would believe it, having a large amount of capital expenditure on projects, the operational expenditure on the projects and sustaining them ongoing is a very critical part of any business case, but certainly so in the Pilbara. So that's something that we're very keen to make sure we do properly. So as I said, the timeline for this business case is by the end of the year, and then once that business case is presented, we need to hand it over to our executive and then our Senate, and then they decide on the future of this type of project. In saying that, it has strong support from our regional stakeholders, and I do thank Madam Mayor and your officers for being very warm and open with me, and seeing me at my whim and beck and call, which is very good. The state of the project currently is we have project manager on board, APP Projects, who is assisting me manage the procurement of further consultants. We'll have an economic consultant on within a couple of weeks, and we'll hit the ground running to have something by the end of the year. And on that note, I'd like to invite.
Terrific.
Three
questions.
Yeah.
No, terrific. Any questions, elected members?
No.
How are we funded?
Are we funded? All the badges on the bottom. So this is a business case process. It's funded by the Pilbara Development Commission through the Royalties for Regions program, and UWA have put in a commitment of funding to the project as well. Once it's a business case, the funding will come from. There's likely to be a round of the capital expenditure needs to be sought from industry partners, government, both levels of government and the university itself. So that's another process in itself.
Terrific. Any other questions, elected members?
So Port Hedland would be your base?
We're currently looking at Karratha and Port Hedland, and everyone says to me, "Come on, who's the winner? Come on!" And it's really not about that. So it's
the city.
They're very specific towns with very specific attributes. Port Hedland has a much better connection to the ocean, so our ocean vessels are much more likely to be serviceable from this region. The Karratha with a new hospital in the main street and a GP super clinic that we're engaged with. Is likely to be attractive to some of our health, medicine, dentistry people. So, and this is without having done the business case, there are obvious advantages to being in both towns. I think the business case will, once formed, once attracting partners, there's obviously obvious partners in both towns, and one of them isn't likely to fund something in another town, so that's something that will come at that that stage when we engage with partners, whether it's likely to be funded or not.
Well, you get a warm, fuzzy feeling in Port Ellen.
Port Ellen's very good at that.
Thanks.
Any other questions? Well, on behalf of us all, thank you very much for the update. Certainly please keep us in the loop, and if there's anything at all that we can do to help support and further the case, and particularly for us as the final destination, we really appreciate it. So thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, 10.2, WA Country Health Services, and it's with great pleasure. It was going to be Ron, but... Yes.
So, Madam Mayor...
welcome.
And members of the public. Brian Wilson, I'm the Operations Manager for Head and Health Campus here, and I'm representing WA Country Health here tonight. Thank you. Yes, unfortunately, Ron Wing was keen to be here tonight, was called to an urgent meeting which the Minister was seeking, so has been unable to attend, and sends his apologies. I also have accompanying me tonight Dr. Ganza Farapani, who is our Senior Medical Officer for the campus as well, who may be able to assist if any other questions.
Terrific.
What we've put together for this evening is just a brief overview. WA Country Health is managed or overseen by governing councils, two governing councils, one for the north of the state and one for the south of the state, and this is a civil presentation as to what was given to the governing council members in order to provide some background on the region. So this is just basically the organisational model for WA Country Health. We have the Minister, the Director General, and the CEO for WA Country Health. Underneath the CEO, there are the two Chief Operating Officers, Northern and Remote Country Health and Southern Country Health. Within that, then there are a range of functions that are done within central office, statewide, and strategically. Okay, so within the Pilbara region, we have Ron Winnis, the Regional Director for the Pilbara. He reports through to the Chief Operating Officer for the north of the state, who's normally is Shane Matthews. Currently, Kerry Windsor is acting in that role. He's supported by the Executive Services Coordinator, Georgia Cutting, and then reporting through him the executive across the Pilbara. We have Enhancing Pilbara Health, which manages a range of capital and infrastructure projects across the region. Regional Medical Director, Regional Nurse Director. We then have Directors of Population Health, Mental Health and Aged Care. We also have an Aboriginal Health Coordinator who advises the Executive. And then we have our operations managers. From an operational point of view, the services are split into inland, which includes Newman, Tom Price, Paravidoo, and Nullagine. We then have West Pilbara, which includes, of course, Nicol Bay, Roebourne, Tom Price, Wickham, Onslow, and then East Pilbara, which I'm representing, Headland Health Campus, and also Marble Bar Nursing Post. And we've also got the Director of Corporate Services, who oversees the HR and the financial services for the region. Okay, so just broadly under the National Health Agreement, responsibilities splitting up into state and Commonwealth, and you'll often hear arguments about what's state responsibilities, what's Commonwealth responsibilities. So this is just by way of trying to simplify that. So under the state health system, so the Department of Health and through WA Country Health, we're responsible for the provision of public hospital services, community health services, which of course includes all of the population health, child health services, school health services, etc. Mental health, dental health, Aboriginal health, public health, as I mentioned, and healthcare building projects, capital and infrastructure. The Commonwealth, through the Department of Health and Ageing, are responsible broadly for primary health care, so that's everything through your Medicare locals that you will have heard of, your general practices, etc. Private medical care, as it mentions there, including private allied health services. the community-controlled Aboriginal primary health care, and as I mentioned, Medicare locals, and residential and community aged care. So aged care is the responsibility of the Commonwealth, although it's often augmented by state health services. Just to give you a brief rundown on the type of money that we're talking about. So far year to date, in this financial year, Pilbara is currently expending $175 million, and just at Headland Health Campus, being the regional resource centre for the region, is $60 million. And just to give you an overview of the activity, certainly we saw over the last 3 years, so 10-11, total inpatient separation, so that's the number of inpatients we've had across the Pilbara. We've gone from 13,600, then up to 14,800, and already May this year we're up to 14,100. So you can see there's a steady increase in terms of the demand for inpatient services. Headland Health Campus, our separations have gone from just over 8,000 up to 9,000, just over 9,000 last year, and we'll exceed that again this year. We're at 8,700 currently. So we'll be very similar to where we were at this stage last year. And with the emergency department presentations, and that's of course the pointy end and the one that it seems to impact the most on people, because that's where you go when you're in strife, and where we get some of our greatest compliments, but also some of our complaints as well. So we've gone from 17,500 presentations in 2010-11 up to 21,000 in 11-12, and we're already at 18,000 this year. Interestingly, that significant increase from the 10-11 year to the 11-12 year corresponded with the move from the old hospital site at Port to the new hospital site in South Headland. And one of the factors that's been seen as quite significant there was simply moving the campus to South Headland and having greater access by the majority of people who may have had transport difficulties previously. They've presented, whereas in the past they might not have actually sought and obtained the care that they required. So 18,000 this year. Actually, our emergency presentations this year are almost on exactly line ball to where we were last year. So that significant increase that we experienced initially has seemed to tail off this year. That's not reflected in other parts of the Pilbara. Certainly Karratha at Nickel Bay, they have a continuing increase as they have had over recent years, and also Newman is also significantly affected by increases. And this last line here, Headland Health Campus, what we call Category 4s and 5s, so they're the lower acuity patients that present to emergency departments. What we would typically talk about there is that people who presented with conditions which may have been able to be treated in general practice setting, but either because of timing or because of choice, have chosen to come to the hospital. And in the 11-12 financial year, we had 17,100 out of our 21,000 presentations were in that category 4-5. And you can see this year, only 12,000 so far of our 18,000 presentations are those 4-5s. So we've seen quite a significant move this year in terms of, whilst our total number of presentations to emergency is similar to last year, the acuity of the patients is sicker. So our category 1s, 2s and 3s are representing a much greater portion of those, and we're analysing exactly what that's made up of to see if there's any particular trends that we need to be aware of. But what we've derived and from the decrease in the number of presentations of categories 4s and 5s, that's actually, I like to think, a good news story in terms of more people availing themselves of general practice, which I know certainly through the Port Hedland Medical Centre, I know they've been expanding their range of services and their number of practitioners there. This is just another one of the good news stories that I like to share with people whenever I get the opportunity. So this is Headland Health Campus's emergency department performance. If you're not aware, through the National Partnership Agreement for Health, there's a range of key performance indicators that are standard Australia-wide. With emergency departments, it's called NEAT, the National Emergency Access Targets. And consistently across the state, Headland Health Campus is usually the best performing site across the state. So these are our categories of patients through to category 1s, through to category 5s. The maroon colour represents what the national average is for people seeing within the appropriate times, and the blue bars represent how we perform. So you can see we're consistently meeting or exceeding the national averages across the board. Just an overview of Kappa Works. Of course, being local residents, you're all aware of the facility that opened here in November 2010. And upcoming projects, so from this year onwards, there is still the Karratha Health Campus, which is on the state's infrastructure plan. Staff accommodation in South Headland to, I guess, make housing more proximate to the actual campus rather than having a number of staff living in port. And the Northwest Health Initiative. Now, we're still waiting on when the state government hands down its budget in the new financial year. It's been mooted that there will be a Northern Health Initiative, which will have a range of capital funding, which will include projects to improve facilities at Newman, Tom Price, Onslow, Roeburn and Parabadoo as well. That's great from our point of view in terms of we've benefited significantly from a capital injection in terms of the new facility here, but there certainly is a need for those upgrade and improvement of facilities in the other communities in the Pilbara. Just letting you know the planning processes. So as Scott there, the WA Planning Commission, Planning and Development Act. So the Commission oversees the infrastructure development processes for whole of government. And within that, we have the Pilbara Planning and Infrastructure Framework, and that sets out the strategic direction for the future development of the region. And within the Department of the State Development, they coordinate the Western Australian Government submissions to the State Government infrastructure projects. So for WACS, our health service facility infrastructure, consultation is undertaken at system-wide level through the Capital and Infrastructure Unit. So just to give you an example, we regularly have planning processes whereby we take into consideration all of the information that's available on population, demographics, move and what's happening with industry in terms of planning our framework. There is a document called the Clinical Services Framework, which statewide outlines, depending on the facility and where you are in the state, what range of services should be available at that level of facility and to what standard. And then they've overlaid that with a whole of health facility planning document, which then compares that to the facilities as they currently exist across the state and identifies where there's gap and where the capital investment needs to be made to bring that up to date. So future service planning in the short term. We have moved into a realm in this state in recent years of activity-based funding. That's basically the activity we have is what we get funded for. There is a price for every piece of activity that happens within a hospital or a healthcare setting, and we're funded on that basis. Good thing is that in being in an area where there has been growth in activity, growth in demand for services, that does mean that we have been able to benefit from having some additional funding provided to us in order to cope with those costs. In the longer term, there's the WACS system policy and planning work, and as I've mentioned, the Pilbara planning infrastructure framework, the service planning I've mentioned, the clinical capability framework, and then the Headland Health Service planning study. The last comprehensive planning study was done in 2001, which formed the basis for the planning of the facility we currently have. That, in combined with our current work that we have been doing on an ongoing basis, then goes towards the master plan for, in particular case of Headland, master plan for the Headland site. So that includes, that study took us up to 2021, and so our master planning caters currently for the current facility, caters for that need, and then we have phase two of the master plan, which is for projected increases in demand for services beyond that. That is the end of the show. So thank you for that. I'm aware that there were a couple of other items that were listed when we received some correspondence about being invited here tonight. So through the chair, I'm quite happy to take any other questions.
Elected members, any questions for Brian?
I just wanted to ask, thanks Brian for that.
do we advertise locally for staff at the hospital, or is it just always done through the West Australian, through the professional pages, etc.?
The whole of state government took some action several years ago to go to all online advertising. So there is the WA Jobs site, which is where all government positions are advertised. Fortunately, about 2 years ago, the Pilbara received an exemption to that so that we could advertise locally in local press. So we do that for some positions. It's recognised that for some of our health professional positions, that doesn't necessarily gain us any particular benefit. There's not a lot of local pool of people out there. But certainly for our hotel services and our administrative positions, we do try and advertise those through the local media as well. Didn't happen a lot. I've only been here just on 18 months now. I hand out from Kimberley, sorry. But certainly in the last 12 months, we've made sure that when we do have advertisements, certainly for positions in hotel services, that we've advertised it through that forum.
Okay. And another one, Brian, if I may. Key nurse housing, does that exist for the hospital where you do those key positions for nurses?
It's a difficult and challenging one. One which I spend way more of my time than I would like to dealing with accommodation issues, as many businesses do, taking away from, I guess, your core objectives. But without staff, we wouldn't be able to deliver the services. We do have, across the Pilbara, we own, lease, either privately or through Grow, just over 500 properties across the whole of the Pilbara. Just within Headland, it's currently at about 280 properties. Around about 80 of those are our own properties, and the other 200 are mixed up of lease through private and Grow. There has been a new WACS accommodation policy only just endorsed recently through the executive in Perth. That policy, previous policies talked about specific types of positions being eligible or ineligible for housing. And that may have been applied inconsistently over the years. The new policy talks about housing based on operational and organisational need. So it means that if you've got a specific problem at a particular point in time, and the only way you can solve that position and recruit to it is by offering housing, it gives us the ability to do that. Having said that, we, like many employers, also have some criteria that we apply through that policy in terms of where the person's recruited from, whether their partners are eligible for housing through other services, or whether their partners receive other allowances, etc. So we can make sure that with the resources and within the budget that we've got, that we're providing it to those that absolutely require it.
Thank you.
We don't always get it right, though.
Well, how do you determine visiting specialists? Any specific criteria you've got for that?
So visiting specialists, we do two things. There's visiting specialists over a period of time evolves based on what's available and who's got an interest in coming up here. It might be somebody who has a particular passion for Aboriginal health, for example. But what we do is we overlay that in terms of what's the actual need of the community. We also have, as many people would be aware, what's called the patient-assisted travel scheme, where specialist service isn't available, you may be eligible for assistance to get to Perth to get access to those services. What we do is we constantly review that activity through the patient-assisted travel scheme to see at what point do we reach a tipping point to say, well, we're spending so much money sending a person down for that particular specialty that it's actually more beneficial to pay for that specialty to come up here. We certainly know that from a point of view of just the disruption to people's family lives, it's better and certainly often more culturally appropriate that people be able to access services locally. So we try and do that. And one of the core aims of WA Country Health is to get care closer to home. But sometimes because of super specialisation, we can't always do that. Regrettably, cancer services is probably one of the areas which is most emotive, and which is one that everybody would always like to see available more closely, so you don't have to be disrupted from your family life. but because of the specialised nature and the complexity of it and the interrelationship with various other services, it really needs to be based in a metro area. Bunbury is the first, was the first area to actually have a designated cancer centre outside of the Perth metropolitan area, and of course, as you appreciate, has a much bigger catchment population than what we do. The planning documents that exist at the moment don't foresee that that type of a service would be available in the Pilbara in the foreseeable future.
Does that apply to neurosurgeons as well, is it?
Yes, just too specialised. Yeah.
Any other questions, councillors?
I did ask, my question when I wrote it in was, when will the Wi-Fi be at the hospital? For visiting specialists, they need to use Wi-Fi to connect to their patient records in the city.
So we've got our entire, we're fortunate, our campus is completely wireless. We have wired network, but we also have wireless coverage throughout the facility. Having said that, if it's a visiting specialist who might operate a private practice in Perth and they're coming up contracted to do some work for us, a good example is orthopaedics. We contract that to Hollywood Orthopaedic Services. Because of security issues, they can't log on to our wireless network in order to access their practice information. One really good initiative, of course, national initiative, which you've all probably seen advertised through Medicare locals, is the e-health system. And certainly that's something that we encourage people in terms of, you know, getting on board with e-health will give all health practitioners better access to health records. Mm.
So will Wi-Fi come to the hospital?
So Wi-Fi is there.
I mean, for the general.
Visiting. Yeah. Yeah. So they can use it and log on to access the WA Country Health owned record for the patients. And if they're seeing a patient within our facility, that record is part of our medical record. But they would have to, if they have seen that person in either they've done a procedure in Perth or they've got some outpatient records in Perth, then they have to have another way of accessing that. They can do that by using their own 3G device.
And they do, and apparently it's costing them about $150 for the time that they're actually here. When a Wi-Fi connection, I believe, is a lot less in cost for the hospital to actually have.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, just wanted to share that with you.
Yeah.
Also, school nurses, you actually look after the school nurses?
The Director of Population Health, so my area of responsibility, I'm responsible for the whole of the campus, as well as the operations of the acute sites over the hospital-based facilities. There's a Director of Population Health who manages school health, child health, community health, and the other health professionals.
So to service all our schools for our area, how many school nurses would we actually have registered to attend our schools?
I'd have to find that information out.
Okay. All right.
But I do know that you will... may have been aware that in recent budgets there's been significant increase commitment to increasing the number of school nurses.
So okay, far. All right. And the last one is, does the Pilbara have an MRI machine?
No.
Will we get one?
Unlikely.
Okay.
But an interesting development there. We can never say never because certainly diagnostic technologies are changing all the time, their costs change. MRI machines are licensed by the Commonwealth Government. So you have to be in an area of need determined by the Commonwealth in order to get a license for anything. That was the same with CT scanners. So over the years, CT scanners have become a baseline diagnostic tool and become more available. So we have two within the region. We have Karratha and here. MRIs, there wouldn't be currently a license available, but that's not to say that a private provider might not decide that it is feasible for them economically to establish a facility and have it up and running. The problem is that a patient seen in that facility diagnostically would receive a full bill for that, and that wouldn't be claimable back through Medicare. They do it in some places. Some people will choose to go to a particular provider because they believe they offer a superior level of diagnostic analysis. May or may not be the case.
Okay, thank you.
Well, Brian, thank you very much for that. Oh, sorry, I think the CEO
just
got one question.
I think it'd be remiss of us not to let Brian go without complimenting the campus on some of the exemplary healthcare that
we're hearing, the patients are in down there. I'm hearing very, very good messages from everyone coming to there.
Oh, that's great to hear. Certainly, having lived and worked in the Northwest for many years, it's actually great to be here. I don't think a lot of people recognise that, specifically here in Port Hedland, you have access to some of the best medical care that's available in regional Western Australia. There are more medical specialists that service Port Hedland campus, Hedland Health Campus, than any other regional centre other than Bunbury.
That's terrific. Well, thank you very much. Okay, before we go on to item 11, just an important note, members of the public are cautioned against taking any action on council decisions on items in this evening's agenda, which they may have an interest, until formal notification in writing by council has been received. Decisions made at this meeting can be revoked pursuant to the Local Government Act 1995. Item 11, reports of officers. Item 11.1.1.1, proposed scheme amendment 65 to the Town of Port Hedland planning scheme number 5, include industry noxious and industry general with the transport development zones, with the officer's recommendation on page 23. Do I have any points of clarification?
Yes, Madam Mayor, point of clarification. In the application, there's a very, very big area that they wish to have rezoned. My question is that each application is not a foregone conclusion that anybody can utilise that area unless they make a personal and individual application on that piece of land for whatever industry they wish to establish there. Is that correct?
Sierra?
I might defer that, if I may, to I think the senior strategic planning officer.
Normally we don't do spot rezonings, and that's why the application has been lodged over a certain extent of that area. That's the reason why.
But each individual, through the chair, each person has to make an application of the utilisation of that area once it's been rezoned.
They have to, yes.
Thank you, ma'am.
Do I have any other move, Councillor Carter? Seconded, Councillor Hunt. Do I have any against? Speaker 4.
Oh, that answered my question. Thank you, Madam Mayor. I was a bit concerned about the availability of it, but that answers my question.
Speaker against?
Well, I'd like to speak against. Understanding that this is just the very beginning of the whole process, I think we seem to be doing an injustice of the existing residential component in Wedgefield. And as the point was raised earlier, the proximity to our own Kingsford Business Park, which is basically just across the road. I do have concerns that, as a council, we're talking about putting in a modern, vibrant, bulky goods business park on one side of the road, allowing for some noxious use in the middle, and then on the other side having a residential component in the longer-term Wedgefield zone. So I just do have some concerns just in regards to, as a council, how we seem to be right there in the middle and seem to be contradicting land uses on either side. That's my point.
Speaker 4.
Well, I would debate the residential component of Wedgefield. There's incidental residential accommodation there, but it's not zoned residential. The other thing is that we actually need these businesses. There's nowhere for them to go, and you know, we don't want to lose people wanting to invest in our town because they cannot get land or to establish themselves. So by rezoning it, hopefully we can secure their business in our town.
Speaker against?
Well, I really am concerned, Madam Mayor, through the chair, about noxious things that businesses that are happening in our town. I know we've been down this road before, but there is a residential component to Wedgefield. There's people there who've just not been looked after. They're owner-occupiers. They have businesses there. There are accommodation areas there. The wind blows in a certain direction. So when the word noxious just pops up in front of me, I do really worry about people living in our town. And also, there's people in South Heaven now also receiving the trade winds as well, that's carrying this noxious
you know, whatever cloud it is, it might go their way. So I just think that we should be lobbying the governments a little bit more to say they need some land somewhere else to perhaps expand, because that's what we talked about a couple of years ago. Thank you.
Yeah. Speaker 4.
I understand that the Dairy Estate would be the ideal location for noxious use type industry. It concerns me that the length of time that has taken to come online leaves us in a predicament where we really, I feel that, to echo Councillor Hunt's statements and acknowledging yours, Councillor Zumbach, that we're in a little bit of a downturn in terms of the mining industry, and we have businesses waiting to want to do it. And I really feel that as leaders that we can't, it's hard to say no to businesses. And although this isn't ideal, the Dairy Estate would stop the length of time for the Dairy Estate to be available would stop businesses progressing now. And we need a diverse economy, and we need jobs for people whose businesses are going out of business now.
Thank you. Speaker against?
I'll speak against.
You've already spoken. So thank you. Speaker 4, if there's no other against. Okay, right of reply.
Right, thank you, Madam Mayor. I think if you look into the recommendation, that the initiation of the scheme is purely only allowed the formal referral for the process to start. And as well as I asked the question, does each one have its application? The referral process, the opportunity to determine if the event is environmentally acceptable. It doesn't say it's going to be approved if it's environmentally acceptable. If acceptable, the amendments provide the opportunity in the short term to mean to encourage gentlemen noxious. And when you get to the definition of noxious, it does contain some areas that would be of great concern. Others would be no concern whatsoever. So I do believe that if we are going to start the progressive of this area at all, that we should accept this and initiate this scheme. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Okay, I'll put it to a vote. Those in favour, a show of hands, please. Those against, show of hands, please. Let the vote record 6-2. Motion carried. Okay, item 11.1.1.2, proposed placement of two entry signs at Civic Centre, McGregor Street, with the officer's recommendation on page 43. Do I have any points of clarification?
Yes, please, Madam Mayor. I just had a question. This was coming to Council because it failed to comply with local laws. I was just wondering, in what way do the proposed signs fail to comply with local laws?
See ya.
I have to defer that, sorry, to, I'm assuming it's the Acting Director of Planning and Development Services. So I think it's what's
saying. Can you just repeat that question for us, please?
I just wondered, it just mentioned that it was coming to Council because it failed to comply with the Town of Port Hedland's prescriptive local laws, and I was just wondering in what way it failed to comply.
That's not clear in the report. I didn't know that.
Be happy to take it on notice and let a response be provided afterwards?
Yes.
Great. Any other points of clarification?
Move subject to that clarification.
Yep.
Move, Madam Mayor.
Move, Councillor Carter. Seconded, Councillor Hooper. Do I have any against? Motion carried 8-0. Item 11.1.1.3, proposed placement of three park signs on Parks and Reserve, Recreation Reserve, with the officer's recommendation on page 49. Do I have any points of clarification? Move, Councillor Carter. Seconded, Councillor Hooper. Do I have any against? Motion carried 8-0. Item 11.1.1.4, proposed revocation.
revocation.
Management order on reserve 50372 on lot 3267 Headich Street, South Hedland, on deposited plan 213762.
I wish to declare a financial interest.
Certainly.
You need to state the nature of your interest.
I have an association with the applicant form.
Terrific, thank you. We'll just wait for you. Any other declarations of interest? Okay, I have an officer's recommendation on page 57. Do I have any points of clarification?
No points, I
move. Move Councillor Carter, seconded Councillor Taylor. Do I have any against? Motion carried 7-0. Could someone please... Oh, thank you, Director.
Excision.
Normally pretty good.
Yeah.
Councillor Hoover, as you resume your seat at the table, the officer's recommendation was passed 7-0. And everyone's still having jokes at my expense. Item 11.1.1.5, proposed excision of portion reserve 40088 in brackets lot 4000 on DP215416 and amalgamation into adjoining reserve 40044 in brackets lot 4001 DP215416. With the officer's recommendation on page 61. Do I have any points of clarification?
No points, I move.
Move Councillor Carter, seconded Councillor Jeanbach. Do I have any against? Motion carried 8-0. Item 11.1.1.6, proposed replacement of non-conforming new single house sea container outbuilding and arts and crafts centre on lot 494, in brackets 23, Sutherland Street, Port Hedland. The officer's recommendation on page 67. Do I have any points of clarification?
Partiality, with respect to item 11.1.1.6, non-conforming use, I disclose that I have an association with the applicant. As a consequence, there may be a perception that my partiality on the matter may be affected. I declare that I'll consider the matter on its merits and vote accordingly.
Thank you. Any other declarations? Okay, I have an officer's recommendation.
So move, Madam.
Move Councillor De Cash, seconded Councillor Hunt. Do I have any against? Motion carried 8-0. Thank you, councillors. Item 11.1.1.7, proposed road reserve dedication and closure of reserve 44778. Being lot 5961, Cottier Drive, South Hedland, the officer's recommendation on page 88. Do I have any points of clarification?
No points, I move.
Move Councillor Carter, seconded Councillor Jeanbach. Do I have any against? Motion carried 8-0. Item 11.1.1.8, proposed sewer easements to be created over reserve 37564, in brackets lot 3544. Reserve 37547, lot 3581, on deposited plan 214186, and reserve 40088, on deposited plan 215416, South Hedland. With the officer's recommendation on page 93, do I have any points of clarification?
Yeah,
move Councillor Carter, seconded Councillor Jeanbach. Do I have any against? Motion carried 8-0. We're now on page 96. Item 11.1.1.9, notice of intent to prepare a new local planning scheme, with the officer's recommendation commencing page 100. Councillor Taylor.
Yes, Madam Mayor. I had an amendment to the recommendation on page 100.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to add a following point that the, I'm guessing you may call it point six,
mm-hmm.
That Council requests the CEO or his delegate to review the following items as part of the current Town Planning Scheme 6 project being undertaken. I can pass this over, if you like. The first point being retention of existing use rights for single dwellings in the West End, the area identified by Town Planning Scheme Amendment 22, and the second point being the review of the design provisions pertaining to the West End, in particular for single dwellings.
Okay, we'll just pass that over and then we'll wait till it's typed up and then we'll have a look at it.
Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you.
That was another clarification, Madam Mayor, when you're ready.
Yeah, we might just wait till the CEO comes back. Sure.
Didn't think revocation would, you know, cause getting such laughing.
Let's see if we can find another one.
Like, step out for an item so you can do some reading.
I'm quite happy you haven't reported on that. Who's the officer? Not exactly.
Councillor Taylor, is that what you have written there?
Town planning, so just retention.
So I've just moved the terminology LPS because it's actually a local planning scheme rather than a town planning scheme.
Okay, this was on advice from the director.
Yep. But as long as you're happy, yep. The intent, what you want.
As long as LPS means
yep.
local planning scheme, yep. Which is what we've got here in the
part two, yeah. Yep. Local planning scheme. All right, so we're all happy. Okay, point of clarification.
Yes, Madam Mayor, on page 97, budget implications, STEM reviews the council budget. Can someone convey to me what that budget cost is, estimated cost for that, please, for this implementation?
Yeah.
Can you do the exact amount?
No, within 100. Right.
It's below 200,000.
200,000. Thank you.
Any further points of clarification?
So
no, I've already got a mover in Councillor Taylor, second in Councillor Carter. Do I have any against? Motion carried 8-0. Okay, item 11.1.1.10, proposed sewer easements to be created over lot 3706 on deposit of plan 214019, South Headland, with the officer's recommendation on page 107. Do I have any points of clarification?
So
move Councillor Carter, seconded Councillor Hunt. Do I have any against? Motion carried 8-0. Item 11.1.1.11, proposed road closures and road widenings within the South Headland Town Centre. The officer's recommendation on page 112. Do I have any points of clarification?
So
move Councillor Carter, seconded Councillor Hooper. Do I have any against? Motion carried 8-0. Item 11.1.1.12, proposed extension to a transport depot, non-conforming use at lots 1675 in brackets 3 and 1690 in brackets 2, Harwell Way, Wedgefield, with the officer's recommendation commencing page 118. Do I have any points of clarification?
Move.
Move Councillor Carter, seconded Councillor Hooper. Do I have any against? Motion carried 8-0. Okay, we're all on page 127. Item 11.1.1.13, proposed 19 multiple dwellings on lot 188 in brackets 49, Kingsmill Street, Fort Headland, with the officer's recommendation commencing on page 132. Do I have any points of clarification?
No points.
Move Councillor Carter, seconded Councillor Taylor. Do I have any against? Motion carried 8-0. Okay, we're now on to page 178. Item 11.1.1.14, proposed additional street names, Kingsford Business Park, formerly Precinct 3. The officer's recommendation on page 181. Do I have any points of clarification?
Yes, I do, thank you. On the airport committee, Madam Mayor, mm-hmm. I have not seen any of this come to the airport committee agenda at all, so to be discussed by the committee.
CEO, has it gone to the committee?
I don't believe it has, Madam Mayor. The Kingsford Business Park is not the business, it comes straight to council, not through the airport committee.
Okay.
All right. I'd like to also then put another name forward, Robin Miller, who was the Sugarbird lady,
mm-hmm.
Who was the daughter of Robert Miller from MMA.
Full name or just last name?
In accordance with
the last name,
Our last name only. Well, yeah. Miller, I guess.
Miller?
I guess that would cover both her father and herself.
All right. So I have a mover in Councillor Gillingham to add Miller to the part one of approved use of names contained within table one, with the addition of Miller for any proposed new roads within the Kingsford Business Park, formerly Precinct 3. Move, Councillor Gillingham. Second, Councillor Jeanbach. Do I have any against? Motion carried, 8-0. Well done.
Could I request through Councillor Gillingham that any information you have on the name?
The information is that Robin Miller was...
I'll get it off you. Yep. Out of the session. Okay. Yeah, thanks.
Terrific. Item 11.1.1.15, Delegated Planning, Building and Environmental Health Approvals and Orders for April, May 2013, with the Officer's recommendation on page 183. Do I have any points of clarification? Move, Councillor Carter. Seconded, Councillor Jeanbach. Do I have any against? Motion carried, 8-0. We're on page 195. Item 11.1.2.1, Determination of Proposed Food Vans for 2013 to 2015 and Proposed Inclusion of Marquee Park as an Approved Trading Location. With the Officer's recommendation on page 201, we also have received another page which has an Officer's recommendation and an alternate Officer's recommendation. Councillor Carter.
That point of clarification, I move the Officer's alternative recommendation.
The alternative recommendation. Move, Councillor Carter. Seconded, Councillor Hooper. Do I have any against? Motion carried, 8-0. Item 11.1.1.3.1, review of public submission on proposed property deposition of Canamore Court to Megara Construction Pty Limited. The Officer's recommendation commencing page 210.
We do have an amendment to that, Madam Mayor.
Yes.
It's on the screen.
Can you get scroll up?
Comes
to the
in
top of
down. Comes in at 2.
Yeah, that's where the second one starts.
Yeah. Starts in 2.
Proceed with the property position.
It comes in after 2.
As formally, subject to the joint trust accounts.
Sorry. It comes under section 2, comes under section
3. B, subject to the joint trust account provisions contained in the council resolution of the ordinary council meeting 27th of March. You're happy with that?
That is the recommendation.
Move, Councillor Carter. Seconded, Councillor Jeanbach. Do I have any against? Motion carried, 8-0. Item 2.1.1, J.D. Hardy Youth Zone budget request, with the Officer's recommendation on page 216. Do you have any points of clarification?
Yes, please, Madam Mayor. I just have a couple of questions around the $11 million upgrade that happened in the last 2 years and the current state of the building now. I understand that this recommendation is to spend $250,000 on the current roofing issues, which will be superseded if the permanent solution goes ahead. My question is, the inside ceiling panels are still damaged, are still in a state of disrepair. There's a fair bit of leak, and there was leaking with the recent rainfall event. I'm just wondering what time frame for those ceiling panels on being repaired. What's the time frame for those repairs to go ahead?
The ceiling panels that were, originally damaged in Cyclone Perry, then again through Cyclone Rusty, were purposely not replaced until we had some confidence that we'd found and fixed all of the roof leaking issues. Otherwise, we'd basically put new panels up and then maybe water damaged as well. So our thinking is that we would replace them at the same time as we would undertake the roof repairs, so that the roof doesn't leak and the ceiling panels aren't going to be damaged. New ceiling panels as they're replaced aren't going to be damaged by water leaks.
Further through the chair, so they wouldn't. We're not. That no repairs are going to happen inside the JD Hardy Centre until the short term solution, as identified on page 215, would be completed.
That's
our intention. So, given that it's got a short term solution of 2 to 5 years, how does that fit with being replaced ASAP, or that is that as soon as possible? Is 2 to 5 years?
I guess assessment through the Madam Mayor, through you. The short-term solution, if approved by council and funded, would be put in place through a tender process.
The honourable people.
It would happen as soon as we could go to tender and get a contractor upon ceiling panels to be replaced at that time. What's indicated in the report is that the short-term fix would provide a solution for the roof leaks for 2 to 5 years. But the ceiling panels would be replaced straight away as soon as the roof leaks are fixed.
So that's not a time frame for completing it, that's how long it will last for.
How long it will last.
Okay, thank you for that. And apologies, one more point if I may. What's the expected costs of those ceiling panel replacements if we're looking at this current $300,000 for these short-term solutions? I'm guessing that they're not part of that, so what's the anticipated cost of the ceiling panel fixes?
No, I'm not aware of that dollar figure. We do have some spares because it's part of we're left with some ceiling panels. It would be a small amount of money.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further points for clarification?
Yes, I have two. Only the fact that this building has already incurred two cyclones, my question is, has a claim been put to an insurance company to any of these two cyclones that have been incurred during the buildings have been constructed?
There were some our items which are eligible under an insurance claim through Cyclone Peter. Part of the cost would be potentially recovered on that claim.
Terrific. Any other?
Yes, madam. Yep. I'd like to know what the insurance amount was that we did claim, that we did get back from the insurance claim, and also want to know whether the request, whether this $300,000 at present is in the budget.
Through the chair, we're requesting that it is in, and I suppose it's really around the timing of getting these works done before the next cyclone season. Any item that indicates that the vehicles were under a stadium through Tropical Cyclone Rusty, but it's certainly not an ideal centre to be used, as well we're saying. The JD Hardy is much more appropriate. Even with the issues of the last rain that we had water probably starting very close to ingressing into the stadium. So the JD Hardy, for a whole pile of reasons which are listed in here, is the preferred centre. So if we don't sort it out now, we run the risk of being in cyclone season trying to do these repairs.
I understand that part. What I am concerned about is after $11 million upgrade out there, we've had two cyclones, and the building's been damaged in two cyclones. What I'm asking is that how much money, if we have made an application, how much money have we received from insurances? Why are we having these big insurance covers if we're not claiming policies? I'm concerned about that building was damaged the first cyclone, that was the stuff was done. And what I'd like to know, Madam, how much money has been received for insurance payment for this building, considering we've had two cyclones?
Are you happy to take that on notice?
Yes. Yep. So through you, Madam, we'll take on notice for a report on the insurance claims that have been made on that particular building and the outcomes of those claims.
Yeah. But also whether it's been covered by any of the Wanderer, hasn't at all? But we were talking about Cyclone Peter before.
Yeah, two cyclones.
All right.
So through the chair, it would be through our general insurance.
So just insurance.
Was Heidi, did it get damaged in Heidi?
It leaked in Heidi.
Because Heidi is one of our flammable ones, the ones who got about $400,000 on us.
How about we wait for the report from the CEO, and that will be aligned with cyclone systems and dates and stuff, so we'll take it from there. Okay. Any other points of clarification?
We're page 240 and says external funding is not available for this project, so I suppose that's the $250,000 for the roof, is that right? So can external funding be sourced for the $1.6 million eventually?
Or CEO?
We would certainly attempt, through Madam Mayor, we would certainly attempt to get external funding at any opportunity we will investigate, and if there's appropriate funding mechanism for capital works, we will certainly seek one of those funds.
So maybe through the chair again, why couldn't we get any money, any external funding for this $250,000?
At the moment, Madam Mayor, we're not aware of any funding available and the time urgency that the Director of Engineering Services has submitted is to undertake these works prior to the next cyclone season. We're seeking council support for essentially committing these funds into the 13-14 budget. It'll enable us now to go and run the process for tender and have the works undertaken prior to the 2013-14 cyclone season.
Again, through the chair, I thought being the evacuation centre, one of the main builders in the town, you would have thought that government would have assisted the town in making sure this building was adequately repaired.
Well, there might be opportunities going forward. Remember, the state budget is a bit later this year as well, so we just are faced with an urgent and time-critical issue that needs to be resolved.
Thank you, Madam.
Just going to put a clarification on, Madam Mayor. That means to say that once this officer's recommendation is accepted of this $300,000, it is confirming that this will be an actual account that will be in the budget.
That's correct. The resolution of council would commit the funds into the 13-14 budget.
Sorry, for further point of clarification. The total project budget for the $11 to $12 million upgrade wasn't entirely spent. Given that there's approximately almost $1 million not spent on that project, what possibility is there for that funding to be used? CEO?
Sorry, Madam Mayor, I have to defer, but I understand if there are any funds left, they are committed to the other upgrade projects that are part of the CSR to lift funding. Is it for the...
Madam Mayor, that's correct. Any remaining funds that are shown in our budget are BHP partnership funds, which are linked to the completion. They were part of the total construction budget, but they are linked specifically to the completion of the car parking and landscaping works, their external works. So it can't be used for any other purpose.
Even if the roof's leaking. Sorry, through the chair.
Any further points of clarification? All right, I have a mover in Councillor Carter, seconder in Councillor De Cash. Do I have any against? Motion carried 8-0. Item 11.2.2.1, extension of Pretty Pool Stables leases located Part Reserve 31462, being Lot 5770, Johnson's Lane, with the respective file numbers listed there.
I do have a partiality interest, Madam Mayor, in regards to item 11.2.2.1. I declare that I have an association with the applicant as a confidence there may be a perception that my impartiality on that matter may be affected. I declare that I will consider this matter on its merits and vote accordingly. My reason for that is I'm the present board in the first place.
Great. Do I have any other declarations of interest?
I move.
Second.
Move, Councillor Hunt. Seconded, Councillor De Cash. Do I have any against? Motion carried 8-0. Item 11.2.3.1, extension of contract 10-06, specialised turf care and vegetation management services, with the officer's recommendation on page 224. Do I have any points of clarification?
Yes, if I may, Madam Mayor. Also, on this one you can take on notice if you wish. I'd like to know the cost over the last 3 years of this service in this organisation, please.
All right, very happy to do that.
Thank you.
Thanks, CEO. Do I have any other points of clarification?
So
moved. Moved, Councillor Carter. Seconded, Councillor De Cash. Do I have any against? Motion carried 8-0. Item 11.3.1.1, final adoption of percent for public art policy with the officer's recommendation on page 232. Do I have any points of clarification?
No points, so moved.
Moved, Councillor Carter. Seconded, Councillor Gillingham. Do I have any against? Motion carried 8-0. Okay, everyone, we're on page 279. Item 11.4.1.1, regional price preference policy 2-015, with the officer's recommendation on page 284. Councillor Carter.
I have an amendment to that, if I may add it, Madam Mayor, on the officer's recommendation that we include as three, consultation including but not limited to hosting information from the PCCI. Small Business Association and the Wheatfield Association.
Yeah, so in terms of, it could be a 1A if you'd like, in regards to the public submissions, to garner those public submissions, public consultation to include but not limited to workshops with the Port Hedland Chamber of Commerce and Industry, the South Hedland Business Association, the Wheatfield Association,
That can be included under Section 1, Madam Mayor.
Yep, 1A. Yes. I have a mover and Councillor Carter.
Workshops or submissions?
Workshops. Workshops. Information workshops. Move, Councillor Carter. Did I have a seconder at that stage, or I was still? Do I have a seconder, Councillor De Cash? I'll just wait for it to come up. And the Wedgefield Association. It'd be good just for the business community to know what efforts we're going to help support local business. Move, Councillor Carter. Seconded, Councillor De Cash. Everyone happy? I'll just make sure governance is still happy.
Included,
not limited to. Yeah, key. Good work. I have a mover in Councillor Carter, seconder in Councillor De Cash. Do I have any against? Motion carried, 8-0. Item 11.4.1.2, WA Regional Cities Alliance membership, with the officer's recommendation on page 292.
I have
alternative recommendation. Was yours, sorry, Councillor Hooper, a point of...
I'm so moved, I'd like to see this.
No, I've got a point of recommendation here. Point of clarification.
No, I've got an amendment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've got an amendment. My amendment, Madam Mayor, is the Council do not include the $50,231.14 budget. I think at this present moment, such a deficit amount of money in our things, I think that we can find money better spent than this $50,000. It's not only $50,000, it's accommodations, travel, everything else. And I've not seen in the last 12 months it's been here any great information coming back that's going to assist the town of Port Hedland.
So the wording of your alternative...
Sorry, just for... You have a mover.
Yes.
I think you actually have... It's not an amendment, it's a new substantive motion.
Yep.
All right.
So you've actually got a mover.
Yep.
Okay.
So you need to go... If there's no seconder, if it lapses...
Yep, no. Seconder and Councillor Taylor. Yep. Okay. Any against...
So that's
okay, Speaker 4.
Oh, thank you, Madam Mayor. I think
Speaker 4. So yours hasn't come up at this stage. We are with the officer's recommendation. Officer's recommendation that Council include $50,000 in the draft Town of Port Hedland 13-14 budget to facilitate the Town of Port Hedland's continued membership to the WA Regional Cities Alliance. Move, Councillor Hooper. Seconded, Councillor Taylor. Speaker 4.
It may be that we have not seen a lot of information from this, but I would like to, and I would like to give the CEO some opportunity and some time to come up with some evidence. And then at this point, it's not accepting that we spend this $50,000 at this point in time, but it is just bringing it up. We've got the opportunity to veto it in the budget, but I really would like to see a little bit more information.
Mm-hmm. Speaker against?
Yes, I'll speak against, ma'am. I think it's absolutely ludicrous. $50,000, I've said, we go through this every time. We've got a budget ahead of us at the present moment, and this is deferring it by saying put it in the budget. We put in the budget. We know very well we've got an enormous deficit we've got to cut up on. And divine putting up, not obnoxious, but putting superfluous amounts in there that's going to be cut out in the long run and saying, okay, well, let's put it next year. Why don't we make the decision? I honestly cannot see any benefit of this amount of money being spent for a period of time to getting a report back, which you and I know we can get from the Shire Road than somebody else. It's not only this additional cost, it's the time away that the CEO has, and that's not the day I spent. Recently, I think this was 2 days in Broome, and then his accommodation, is there fares and everything. I do not think we're getting benefit for being a part of this organisation.
Speaker 4.
I'll speak for it. Although I agree that such similar, there seems to be a lot of similar different organisations that we're a part of, which I can see why Councillor Carter's concerned about this dollar figure. However, the merits of this one is regarding the UWA partnership and the initiative from the state government in this group, and I think given that we're we really do want that kind of university partnership to come to Port Hedland, and there's lots of benefits with that, I think that this could be seen as investment money, and by pulling out, it concerns me that the message that we're sending to the wider regional growth plans for this type of thing.
Yeah. Speaker against.
I'll speak against if I could. I agree with Councillor Carter in that spending this sort of this level of dollars without seeing any benefit whatsoever to this council in the last 12 months is ludicrous, especially when we have a deficit position on our budget. It's totally inappropriate. And if we do send the message out that we're spending this sort of money when we're in the position that we're in, I think we cause ourselves a lot of embarrassment.
Speaker 4.
I'll speak for a moment, ma'am. The reason why we got in it, we were invited by the Premier in 2011 to join this alliance, ourselves, Broome and the Shire of Karratha. So to be invited by the Premier to be part of this the situation and to discuss the economic viability and the population growth in the regional cities or towns, I mean, it's something that we should grasp both hands and be part of. Now, if we turn around now and say, look, thank you, but no, thank you, we don't want to be part of it, I don't think we'll be invited again. And if we are going to become a city, we have to be part of this situation.
Thank you, Madam. Speaker against?
Yeah, I'd like to speak against only because with having representation from universities before at the campus in what was known as the South Hebron College of Eastern Cape Tape, what's now the Pilbara Institute, is that there was a point of contact at the college for the universities where new students could go to that point of contact and be given help. But those positions have been dissolved, and that's been taken away from us over 18 months ago, and all the regional centres, the university contacts there have been dissolved. So I can't see us getting anything out of this at the moment. I really think that we could find out a little bit more information, spend the money more wisely, perhaps somewhere else with our young people in town. So, thank you.
Yeah. Speaker 4. Is there another speaker against?
Yeah, I'll speak against it. I'm totally in agreement with Councillor Johnbeck and Carter that $50,000 that we just can't afford at the moment. We've got a deficit budget. We'll be taking it away from other areas of the community that desperately need this money. So I can't see that we're going to get value for money right now when we need the money in our budget right now. No, I just don't think we should be spending it.
Okay, right of reply.
Yes, I hear the arguments, and I agree that we need to look at it very carefully to see whether it is value for money. Having said that, I don't think we can decide that right at this present moment in time. I think we do need some more information brought to the table, and I'd like to see the offer of the CEOs come to pass, that we do get that information, that we can assess it properly at the proper time in the budget.
Okay, I'll put it to a vote. Those in favour of the officer's recommendation, a show of hands, please. Those against the officer's recommendation, show of hands, please. Let the vote record 3-5. The motion is lost. Councillor Carter.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I now would like to move my resolution that we do not include the amount of $50,000 in the 2013-14 budget.
Anything else in your alternative motion there?
I think it can be reviewed at any time during the year that we find that there is advantageous to be part and parcel of it. I also think we can obtain information from fellow members, and we can request that we still receive the minutes of the meeting from these organisations.
Yeah, so that the CEO is requested to approach them and to see if we can be of observer status.
Yes.
Yep. Okay, so I have a mover in Councillor Carter, seconder in Councillor Johnbeck.
So just to clarify, Madam Mayor, we don't need a resolution not to include it because the resolution to include it has been lost, so yes. That's an automatic. It's not included.
No.
So
what happens if we want to direct you to tell them that we don't
won't be paying and that we'd like to request being observer. So
that's the second part.
Rather than have no unfinished business, I'd rather do something, close it out.
Yeah, no, sorry, just the first part I thought Councillor Carter was referring to is another motion to not include it.
No. My mention was that we do not put the man in the budget. But it's nothing to stop the CEO from advising the organisation that you would still like to receive the minutes of the meeting or any association, but no monetary financial contribution.
Councillor Carter, you're clear on that. Councillor Jeanbach, you're clear on the resolution. Okay, so you'll have...
No, I'm not... I'm sorry, I'm just trying for clarification.
Yep.
So, just if I can, bear with me, because, again, Councillor Carter used the words that we're not included. So... At this stage, we've got a resolution saying don't include it.
Correct.
Sorry, resolution is lost to consider it.
That's right. Yep.
So can I just seek some clarification? Is this about a suspension of the membership seeking observer status, or is this cancellation of membership with still seeking
it's
observer status?
It's a cancellation of the financial membership. We are not making a contribution of $50,000.
13, 14.
Correct.
So is it a suspension?
Yes, you can use the word suspension.
I'm sorry, I'm trying to put words in your mouth.
If we're not including in the budget, yes, it can be a suspension. It can come in 14, 15 next year.
Reconsidered.
Yeah, reconsidered then. But in the budget, okay. Financially, no.
Are you comfortable with me to word that up?
Yes. We won't close the gate.
You're
comfortable with that? Right. We won't fix the roof. You want $50,000 for a roof, you won't get
$50,000 out of me. $11 million.
There's some about roof.
They paid $11 million and got a leaking roof.
Yeah, we still
need a leaking. No, stop.
As you're being recorded.
On the first? He got himself one.
Shit. Well, I was closer to the door. Well, I'm not belonging after the delegation. It might be long after this delegation. I'll get you one. Get you a beer.
Happy seconder?
Yeah, happy with that?
Yes, thank you.
Moved and seconded, happy. All right, are any against?
Yep.
All right, Speaker 4.
I've set it up. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Speaker against?
I'll speak against it, Madam Mayor. One minute was saying we're not going to pay up $50,000, but all these other people, all these other organisations will be paying up to be part of it. And then you're saying that we should be observers and we'll get the minutes of the meetings they have. Well, I'll tell you what, if I was part of that organisation, I'll tell you exactly what, you know, there's no way I'd give you any information, you know, after spending $50,000. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Speaker 4. Any speakers against?
We have kind of covered it a little bit, but I am concerned that when questions come up, such as the UWA project, given that this is so closely linked to that, and they say, do we put it in Port Hedland or do we put it in Karratha, and we're not a member of this group, that directly impacts that. I'm also concerned that on such a small item of money, and I'm not one, as you know, because I often get out money, so before I have sniggers, $50,000 is a lot of money. But if you're comparing it to $11 million spent on a project that has a leaking roof as a result, and you'll sit around and go, oh, let's pay $300,000 to it, then in comparison, I think that this isn't worth the point that it's making for the budget, when it could be making a really good point to the UWA partnership and to the Premier's office.
Okay, Speaker 4. Write a reply
just
now.
Just write a reply. I think I've heard enough, I think, Madam Mayor. I think it's not as though we're going to cut your arm off. And I think at this stage it's a logical thing. I hear what you're saying. I've been associated with committees and I've said that I don't know financial benefit to it, but I have never stopped from getting information on it. I think that's the most ignorant thing to think that a person will just not write you a letter and send you a minute because you're not a member of the association, financial member. I think that's a lot of rubbish.
Okay, I'll put it to a vote. Those in favour of the alternate recommendation, a show of hands, please. Those against the alternate recommendation, let the vote record 5-3. Motion is carried.
Can I have a,
thank you, Madam Mayor.
The votes recorded, Madam Mayor, on that second one.
Those against were Councillor De Cash, Councillor Hooper, Councillor Taylor. The remainder who are present were 4. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Okay. Item 11.4.1.3, nomination of the Town of Port Hedland representative on the De Grey Land Conservation District Committee. The officer's recommendation on page 297.
Just wait.
declaring impartiality. 11.4.1.3. Regarding nomination of the Town of Port Hedland representative on De Grey Land Conservation District, and in regards to this matter, I just felt that I have an association with the applicant as the landowners of De Grey Station, and as a consequence, there may be a perception that my impartiality on the matter may be accepted. I declare that I will consider this matter on its merits and vote accordingly.
Thank you, Councillor Gillingham. No other declarations of interest?
I'd like to nominate the Mayor as the delegate to represent the Town of Port Hedland on this association. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Second.
Thank you, Councillor Carter. Seconded, Councillor De Cash. Do I have any against?
Can I ask a point of clarification? Is that probably the officer's recommendation?
Yes.
No.
There's been an alternate recommendation moved by Councillor Carter, seconded by Councillor De Cash.
That's what I was asking, so that this was an alternate.
This is an alternate recommendation moved by Councillor Carter, seconded by Councillor De Cash. Do I have any against?
Could I just hear what the recommendation was again?
The alternate recommendation. That the Council nominate the Mayor, Kelly Howlett, to represent the Town of Portland as a member of the Grey District Committee for a period of 12 months.
So, can I ask a point of
three years.
So, the CEO isn't going to call for expressions of interest. It's just
not under this resolution. I have a mover and seconder for this resolution, which is doing what has been instructed there. You're okay?
I just wasn't getting it. So one's calling for expressions of interest and the other is just saying we've nominated...
It's two options? We're going with option B.
I'm just asking what the options are. So that's the point of clarification is... One option is calling for his expressions of interest to the CEO and the other is putting a candidate forward. That's all.
I'm panicking.
Still happy mover, still thank happy you. Seconder. Thank Do you. I have any against?
Can't see any reason.
Motion carried 8-0.
Okay.
And just the reason behind that alternate recommendation, Councillor Carter?
I think it's appropriate that the Mayor at this stage represent the Town of Port Hedland and an organisation such as this because it's got a lot to contribute to the future direction of the Town of Port Hedland.
Terrific, thank you. Okay, governance. Item 11.4.2.1, Annual Western Australian Local Government Convention and Exhibition 2013 and appointment of delegates for the WALGA Annual General Meeting. Councillors, on page 300, we have some number of blanks. Can I have anyone put forward names?
Councillor Carter, was it?
No, not me. I'm going. I don't want to nominate a proxy. Yeah.
Anyone kindly offering to be a proxy? Do we need a proxy CEO? If we know that two healthy delegates will be going and we'll be okay?
That's why we're asking for proxies. In all seriousness, I think it's still... If you want to use your two votes and be able to cast your two votes at the annual general meeting, it pays to have a proxy in case of unforeseen circumstances.
All right. Councillor Hunt?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, please give all the names of councillors attending. Yeah. Councillor De Cash.
Yeah.
Councillor Carter.
Yeah.
Councillor Gillingham.
Yeah.
Councillor Jeanbach. Councillor Hunt. Okay. And Mayor Howlett. Okay, that fills in all the gaps. I have a mover in Councillor Carter, seconder in Councillor De Cash. Do I have any against? Motion carried 8-0.
Thank you, Madam Mayor.
You are okay with that, governance?
I'm sorry.
Is everyone who is attending on that list?
We don't know that, Councillor Jacobs.
Too bad.
Yep,
we'll have to add it
later.
Does the mover and seconder happy, Councillor Carter, Councillor De Cash, if we add Councillor Jacobs?
I was just going to say, thank you, Madam Mayor.
Yeah.
We won't add her as a proxy, but we'll add her that she will attend. If she doesn't, then that's okay. Everyone is still happy with that? Is it still 8-0? Yep. Okay.
Thank you.
Sorry, governance. Just add Councillor Jacob. Terrific. Everyone's happy. Mm-hmm. Good pickup. All right. Item 11.4.2.2, annual statutory review of Town of Port Hedland delegation register. Right. The officer's recommendation, page 305.
I had several points of clarification on that, Madam Mayor, or relations to the register.
Yep.
On page 15, in the function to be performed, I would like the word the placement executive delegated authority approval to restore placement up to 1 million with written approval with the signature of the mayor on all investments of 1 million and over.
Mm-hmm. And your other change?
My other change is in section 1.7, the Chief Executive Officer's delegated authority to accept the tender when the consideration involved does not exceed $100,000.
And that's on page?
That is on page 22.
All right.
And another point of clarification, if I may, Madam Mayor, which was mentioned previously tonight, and I'd just like to elaborate on it because I did have a discussion previously before, and that's a comment they made about force.
Yep.
It was mentioned. I'd just like to read a section of the Act. It says, use of force under section 103. It states, an authorised person may use assistance and force that is reasonably necessary in the circumstances when exercising a power under this Act, but cannot use force on a person.
Mm-hmm.
So there was some clarification about whether it's force, whether it's going to be an obstacle, whether it's going to be a building, what it was going to be, but cannot use force against any person.
All right. So I have a mover with those additions in Councillor Carter. I have a seconder in Councillor Jombach. Councillor Hooper, are you okay? Or was that a point of clarification?
No, just read this.
We'll hold just for a second. Any other points of clarification?
Just through the chair, this is what the information we can receive.
Yeah, that's, I just received it.
The processes that underpin, so you've got the policies, then the processes, the process information will be distributed.
That's a copy of the Building Act.
Building Act.
Councillor Hooper? I have a mover in Councillor Carter, seconder in Councillor Jombach. Do I have any against? Okay, Speaker 4.
Oh, thank you, Madam Mayor. I think I went through this very thoroughly. I do think that that the two items I mentioned are very important ones. It's not a vindictive thing. It's something I do think that you're spending money of that nature should have another signature on it. And I also do think that under our own bylaws, which states that we have $100,000, and that then becomes a tender documentation after that, is the reason why I suggest we have that limitation.
Speaker against.
I'm just concerned that by taking out this use of force and assistance, that we would set ourselves up for a problem of litigation where there may be, in case of, as was mentioned before, a dire situation of cyclonic proportions where someone is resisting or unwilling to do something in regards to their own safety or the safety of those around them, and there's no time to argue. Is there some prescription in this that defines what is allowable force and what is not? I just think this needs a little bit more opening up. I think by taking this out just here now without...
It's not out. It's just being clarified.
Is that just clarified?
It's still in there.
Because what happens in here, excuse through the chair, why I clarified that, I had that concern. It says use of force and assistance. I didn't agree with that at all. And so then I got a clarification under the Act that that terminology does not apply to a person.
See, the Building Act, and this is the Building Act that we're looking at here.
Correct, that is the Building Act, yeah.
Okay, so we're in the debate, so anything further in your against?
I withdraw my against.
Okay, all right, so any other speakers against?
Yes. I don't know, just for the, to be more efficient, I think, saying that the chief executive officer cannot approve things up to $500,000, I think that's a bit ridiculous in this time and age. You know, we're $500,000 really is not, you won't get that much for $500,000 if you get my gift. So to be more efficient, I think the CEO should be allowed to, that the $500,000 should be stand and CEO is the delegate authority up to that amount of money.
Yeah. Speaker 4?
Yes, I'll speak 4. Item 1.17 tenders refers to two policy documents which clearly state the $100,000 maximum, and I'd like to just verify that that's stated in item, that the reference to council's procurement policy and council's tender policy, which does stipulate the $100,000. So at this stage, the document is contradictory, and I'd like it to see it fall in line with the two policies.
Speaker against?
I'd like to speak against, Madam Mayor. I am concerned that that the executive officer of an organisation as big as the town of Port Hedland, and with as many staff and contracts and budgets, that I'm concerned that in terms of from an operational perspective, that in a business sense, that a CEO of the nature of such a business would have an authority up to $500,000 for operational purposes, and it concerns me that by lowering this amount, we actually add to the cost of doing business within the town of Port Hedland, which is something that we don't want to do, and decrease efficiencies in terms of operations. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Yep. Speaker 4.
I'd like to speak for. Look, we've had a lot of public coming to the meetings for the last 12 months or so, worried about finances, and also just that we had a rates meeting just recently as well, and there's a lot of people concerned about the way that we're dealing with our money. So I just think this would be a safeguard, and through the chair, if Councillor Zobak has just produced this information here, which I'm sorry I wasn't totally aware of, this is just an interesting concept.
Point of clarification, Madam Mayor.
Yep.
Thank you.
I don't like to interfere in debate, but I think there's some confusion about what the tender regulations state in terms of when the organisation is required to call tenders versus the ability of council to give delegated authority to accept tenders. Certainly, the function of general regulations require us to go to tender for anything over $100,000 unless the goods or services are covered under a common user agreement through the state government.
That's correct.
That doesn't matter what it might be. That's a separate issue to the delegated authority to consider tenders. So just for clarification, the two points should not be confused. So certainly the regulations are quite clear when a local government needs to go to tender, and our procurement policies are in alignment with those requirements of the legislation. This issue is simply about the level of delegated authority that Council is prepared to give to the CEO.
Okay. Thank you, CEO. Speaker against?
I just have a right of reply, Madam Mayor.
Oh, just wait. I've been quite generous in any more fours. Speaker 4? All right. Right of reply.
Right of reply. I hear what the CEO said, but to give an example why I'm so adamant and not so adamant about the fact is that we recently did call tenders for a certain organisation of ours for a service, and that tender document was $230,000. It did not even come into the town council for approval. That's the reason why I want that restriction. The tender document can go out, it can be dealt with, it can be done with, it can be adjudged, it can go out to the directors to do whatever they want to. It did not come back to you. It was approved by one signature only. That's my objection. That's why I want this information in, so that does not happen again. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Okay, so before I put it to a vote, just to be clear, so the officer's recommendation with part one adopts the attached with the amendments that have been proposed, and then the remainder part two all remain as listed there. Move, Councillor Carter.
Sorry, I need further clarification, Madam Mayor, on the through Councillor Carter.
Yep.
I need to pick this up. So on page 15, Councillor Carter. This is the investment.
That's investment, yes. That becomes the Chief Executive Officer's delegated authority to approve the withdrawal and placement up to $1 million with written approval with the Mayor.
And what happens?
Signed with the Mayor. All investments $1 million and above.
sorry, it doesn't... So you, I guess what you're suggesting is that all investments need to be signed off by the Mayor and the CEO.
No, it says in here to approve the placement of $1 million above. It doesn't say anything below million. The situation is $1 million above, not below. So it's an investment thing. It's not this.
Sorry, I'm not trying to be difficult. I'm just trying to make sure we get this right so we don't have to revisit it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I'm even more confused. Are you suggesting that anything over $1 million requires the Mayor's and the CEO's signature?
Correct. Yes. Up to and include over $1 million.
So anything from 1 cent up requires the Mayor's signature?
$1 million and above.
And that's
above.
What it currently reads.
At the $1 million, so I'm not talking about that. You're getting semantic now. I'm talking about a $1 million check or expenditure. The placement of up to $1 million. It doesn't say about anything expenditure, $1 million, and the written approval of the Mayor, all investments. So to make it simply,
I get it. No, just no, make just, it. No, so, no. So if it's under $1 million, it's still just the CEO? Yeah. Yep, as it is. And then a new paragraph here that delegate authority to approve the withdrawal and placement of $1 million and above.
With written approval of the Mayor.
Yeah. With a written approval of the Mayor. I'm not talking about expenditure. I'm talking about
anything $1 million and above. Yeah.
Exactly.
Investments?
Investments only. I'm not talking about expenditure. I'm talking about investments. That's what it states. 1.2 investment.
So, Madam Mayor, that's how it currently reads.
It doesn't say that you can do it yourself. It says the delegate authority to approve the withdrawal and placement of up to $1 million and with a written approval of the Mayor, all investments of $1 million or above of council funds for investment purposes. But that hasn't got her signature in there.
But if you
can you have written approval / signature?
It says the approval is different to signing.
Point of clarification, perhaps it's just the word signature.
Yeah.
Isn't written approval a signature?
Written
signature of the Mayor, this morning.
Written signature of the Mayor?
Yeah.
Instead of approval?
Yeah, written signature. In other words, I want you to sign the cheque.
So to send an email saying yes, but you've got to sign as well.
You can't, that's not a legal document.
So, but yeah, copy of the email.
You're still happy, seconder?
Yes, yeah.
All right.
The written approval including signature?
Yes.
Including signature?
Yes.
So we're not changing the amounts?
No.
Right.
No. Amounts remain as is.
Okay.
Okay, and the other one was on page 22, Arnold?
22, just trying. 22.
All right, good idea. Glad we pulled up.
It's just simple. The chief executive has delegated authority to accept a tender when the consideration of does not exceed $100,000. That's the only alteration.
All right. Then I just wanted to make sure we capture that we still have part two. Appoints the following categories of officers to administer the following acts and local law. Dog Act 1976, Dog Act 1976, Cat Act 2011, Cat Local Law, Control of Vehicles, Off-Road Areas Act 1978 and Bushfires Act.
Yep.
So that's, am I correct now, mover and Councillor Carter, seconder and Councillor Jean-Bac still?
Sorry, which page was that?
This is
305.
Yeah. Sorry, back to the...
You've got to do that part two. Okay, so we're happy with a modified part one and still part two as it is. Councillor Jean-Bac, you're still happy?
Yes.
Great. Now I'll put it to a vote. Those in favour, a show of hands, please. Those against, a show of hands, please. It is 5-3. It does require an absolute majority, and the absolute was just attained with the 5. So the motion is carried. 5-3. Thank you. Okay, item 11.4.3.1, financial reports to council for period ended 31st of May 2013. The officer's recommendation on page 315. Do I have any points of clarification?
No points, I move.
Move Councillor Carter, seconded Councillor Hunt. Do I have any against? Motion carried 8-0. Item 11.4.3.2, rates payable by the Port Hedland Speedway Club, with the officer's recommendation on page 320. Do I have any... Yep, move, Councillor Hooper. Seconded, Councillor Gillingham. Do I have any against? Motion carried, 8-0. Late items as permitted by presiding member council. Item 12, there are nil. Item 13, reports of committees. 13.1.1, Airport Committee Minutes, 5th of June 2013. Officers' Recommendation 1. Do I have any points of clarification on officers?
Can I question something about the minutes?
Yeah. Yep. And I'm just doing officers' Recommendation 1.
This is the council seals. Yep, no worries.
Just because that was different, the next one requires an absolute, so I don't want to confuse it all.
I'm just going to go page 30 of the minutes. Airport, I've had this outstanding Horizon power bill that's been going on for 2.5 years. Can someone explain to me why? Why it's 2.5 years old? What's the...
CEO?
I was going to ask Councillor Carter to explain. But I will defer to the Director of Engineering Services, please.
3 years has been going on.
With regard to the meters, and there was what happened, there was they said they didn't read the meter, but there was an estimation on the bill. And the estimation that they put in the council queried that bill in the first place, and it was so high they were told not to pay it. Subsequently, from then, there's lots of different meters at the airport, and one main meter. So there's been a whole lot of confusion around which meters have been read by Horizon Power, which haven't. We've been in meetings with Horizon Power now, and the manager of their meters from Perth has been up here, and Horizon Power, I think, Port Hedland, now involved as well. So they've mapped out all the meters in the airport, which has uncovered some other problems as well. So we're in just about the final stage of paying the bill. One of the issues that we had, they had verbally said to us that they had power within their act to recover the monies outstanding, which if some would be due back to the town. We've asked for that, for confirmation from that in writing, which we haven't received from Horizon. Notwithstanding that, we're just about at finalising this, but it has been very frustrating for all the people who have been in the airport committee to understand it's not a simple matter, it's just paying this bill. So there's one main meter at the airport, and there's lots of sub-meters at the airport. And that's what's caused the problem. Our initial electrical upgrade that we did stage one, we put new meters in which haven't been read or weren't wired into the system correctly at the airport, signed off by Horizon Power. So there's some issues with the original contract which Horizon Power is sorting out, because they've meant to have done that close out with Horizon. So it's fairly complicated, long-winded explanation to what's happened, and there'll be a report coming back to the committee. But we're very close to finalising.
Through the chair, the sort of cost that's outstanding comes out of the airport fund.
Well, we've got the
money there. We've got to get. It's not a budget issue. It's
800,000.
I wouldn't pay. Thank you, Madam Mayor. I've just needed that clarification.
I'm sure I might mention 800 or pass.
Because no, there's no figure there either.
Points of clarification? Okay, so we're just considering officers' recommendation one. I have a mover in Councillor Carter, seconder in Councillor Dekash. Do I have any against? Motion carried, 8-0. Okay, and then officers' recommendation 2, which does require an absolute majority. Any points of clarification? Do I have a mover? Mover in Councillor Hunt, seconder. Councillor Gillingham, do I have any against? Motion carried, 8-0. Okay, 13.1.2, Audit and Finance Committee Minutes, 12th of June 2013. The officer's recommendation, do I have any points of clarification?
No points of clarification, so move.
Move, Councillor Dekash, seconded. Councillor Carter, do I have any against? Motion carried, 8-0. Item 14, motions of which previous notice have been given are nil. Item 15, confidential items, there are nil. Item 16, applications for leave of absence.
Yes, Madam Mayor. 3rd of July till the 7th of July, thank you.
Great. Councillor Carter.
Nothing, thank you, Madam Mayor.
Councillor Gillingham.
Yeah, two of those things. I'll be away the evening of the 3rd of July and also the 10th of July to the 22nd of July.
Great, thank you. Thank you. Councillor Hooper?
I waited in last time.
Oh, good work. You're ahead of the game. Councillor Jeanbeck?
No, thank you.
Councillor Hunt?
No, Madam Mayor.
And Councillor Taylor?
Mine's in well and truly, so I'm away for a little bit.
And yours is in already?
Mine's already in.
Great. Terrific. Can I have a move on? Councillor Carter, seconder, Councillor Gillingham, all in favour. Carried 8-0. Closure. The date of the next ordinary meeting of council will be held on Wednesday, the 24th of July, commencing at 5:30 p.m. If there's no further business, I'd like to declare this meeting closed at 8:27. Thank you very much, councillors, staff, governance, and members of the public. We'll see you at the next meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Twice he's there
today.
I
left him put that in the black
book.
What's he done? I lost
class. What's
wrong?
What's that? We picked up about the dividend written response.
Yeah, yes. Yep.
So there's a few changes there, and I'll just add that bit in as well. So we're not intending to take any as.
Okay.
Because that was his question. We didn't really answer his question. Why doesn't someone take it?
Yeah, no, that's fine. Okay.
The other thing is I need to, just as a reminder,